as the sun still peeks through the blinds. Welcome back to another week of the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar here live with you on this wonderful Monday night. How are you, sir?
I'm great. I love it when MoCon is here the night before. The microphone is exactly at the right height. And I don't have to do anything except log into the computer.
And look pretty.
And look pretty.
And say some smart things occasionally.
I might do that.
Just once in a while. I mean, they can be clever. They can be smart.
They're always clever, Dave.
Tone down the snarkiness, okay?
Oh, come on.
No. Come on. I mean, we've been on for like 30 seconds. And we already have this snarky tone going on already. We have a guest in studio.
I didn't even say hi. Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah, hi, Dave.
How are you?
Good.
How was your week?
It was good. It was good. I'm back at work, so.
Yeah. Well, welcome back to
thanks.
To work.
To real work.
To the real world, exactly. Yeah. Not this fake stuff that we do every week for you, which we love. And my goodness, the Olympics are
in full swing.
I would say so. Pretty much. I mean, we haven't had track started yet.
Uh-huh.
The swimming's going, the water, the rowing, the canoeing is sort of slowly starting in earnest.
When does the track start?
I believe next week.
Okay.
Or a little later in the week.
Okay.
We're going to speak with a former Olympian today who we've had on the show before.
Yeah.
We're also going to speak with the head of sprint management, which is a manager of Olympic athletes. His name is Chris McAshew. And boy, it's going to be a really interesting show. We will shift over to the Olympics. We're going to start with some MLB. And
we might as well, huh?
I think so. Well, let's introduce our in-studio guest. Benjamin Christensen, welcome to Montreal, man.
Hey, appreciate it.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're fantastic. It's nice to see your smiling face in studio.
Aww. Whatever we can see of his face.
It's a little. The beard continues to grow, much like the legend.
Yes.
And yeah.
For anyone wanting a visual, think of Kurt Russell circa 1982, and that's what Ben looks like.
Yeah, that's a very valid point right there.
And a much darker beard, though.
another big baseball guy. Wasn't he a minor league baseball player?
Yeah, he was in Portland.
Yes, he was, yeah.
And El Paso.
There you go. Okay.
Ben knows everything.
Yeah, we're going to have
I'm glad to have him here.
Well, I mean, I can't remember if his grandfather or his uncle actually owned the Portland Mavericks at the time. And that's actually how he was able to play in Portland for when he did.
Well, he was a child star, too, wasn't he? He was in some Disney movies.
He did okay. I mean, strongest man in the world and
strongest man in the world?
Yeah, that was one of the early ones he did. I'm trying to remember. Okay,
not an actual title.
That was the title of the movie. And then The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes is the other one.
I don't know either of those things.
And then another interesting tidbit about Kurt Russell in his Disney days.
Uh-huh.
Walt Disney's dying words he wrote on a piece of paper, Kurt Russell.
That's sort of like Adams and Jefferson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why on earth would he write Kurt Russell as his dying words? Not like freeze my head or... Well, there's a whole bunch of places we could go that we're not going to. In the spirit of the Olympics and of cooperation, I think we'll leave that alone. In about 5 minutes' time, we're going to be joined by a Major League Baseball manager. That's right. Manny Acta rejoins us on the Kaufman Show. It's been a little over a year. He was our first guest.
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't here at the time.
No, you were not, but that's okay. You were in our thoughts and our prayers at the time. And
yeah, everybody's in everybody else's thoughts and prayers these days. I've noticed that on Twitter and Facebook. Thoughts and prayers. Yeah, that's going to do me a lot of good. Thank you very much. I'm in your thoughts and in your prayers.
So wait, how about if repost this or, you know, like the version of the chain letter?
I know you won't repost this.
That's right.
You know, psychology. I'm like, oh, dude, he's totally calling me out that I won't repost this. I should repost this.
You obviously love cancer.
Even though I care not about anything that you're saying or that you'll ever have to say. And now you're off my friends list.
Retweet this. Please retweet this.
No.
Okay.
No. Anybody ask me to retweet something, I won't.
Very rarely.
Unless it's you, Dave, because...
I don't ever ask. I've never solicited a retweet.
We share an agenda.
We do.
We share an agenda.
We do. As corporate folks, we share an agenda.
Yeah.
As you all know, Jay and I are high at the top of the chain.
Yeah.
Making a lot of decisions. Jay and I do not mess around.
No.
Jay can be found on Twitter at JPubRadio. I am at The Kaufman Show. Ben is at Shaka Brody, Shaka Brodie. And Steph Hamel's here as well. You on Twitter?
Yes, I am.
What's your handle?
Stefan Hamel.
PH.
That's it. PH. Right. No E after the N.
That wasn't confusing at all. I hope you all got that. Everybody with a scorecard got that one. We're gonna take a quick break, and then we're going to be joined by Manny Acta from the Indians. Indians are, they're in a rough spot right now. They just got swept by the Minnesota Twins. They're on an off day today. Trading deadline is tomorrow. What's going to happen to them? We shall find out. This is The Kaufman Show. We will be back.
All got to go when we're driving in the car. It makes my baby seem so far. I need you here with me, not way over in a bucket seat. I need you to be here with me, not way over in a bucket seat.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. We've got special guest Ben Christensen in studio all the way from out west. Now, Ben, do you consider yourself a Portlandier or a Californian?
Still going with the Californian, even though I'm not a registered voter in either. I'm actually a registered voter in Washington.
Well, now you're just throwing us curveballs. So we're just waiting for Manny Acta to call in. Very reliable individual. I'm sure we'll hear from him in a couple of minutes. Honestly, the Indians team is one that I've been able to get behind. I'm not expecting you to contribute much here, Ben. I know you're an A's fan through and through.
Yeah.
You're not going to.
One guy can't pick a state. The other guy can't pick a ball team.
I have not been able to pick a baseball team. Do you? Do you have a club right now? Like a team that you wake up and check
the
box?
We talk about this all the time.
Right.
I don't.
Right.
I don't care.
I don't think we're expected to.
No. I tried to like the Royals, but I just can't. So.
Oh, I like a lot of teams. There's a few. And even the teams that I like, am very upfront about hating, like the Yankees, I have a lot of trouble hating the New York Yankees right now when they have an NDG born and bred catcher on their team. And if any of you missed the New York Times on Sunday, go online, newyorktimes.com. Check out the article with Russell Martin. Fantastic article. 6 pages. All about an extra inning game that he caught against the Nationals last month. I believe the game went 14 or 15 innings. And he goes through a lot of the situations in it pitch by pitch and describes what he's doing and how he can sort of rationalize the sub-200 batting average and still be okay in his mind because he knows that he's contributing so much. And it's okay, I might have gone 0 for 6 at the plate today, but I saved 3 runs. So Russell Martin makes it easier for me to cheer for the New York Yankees.
Okay.
Yeah. and adds to the confusion for me because I just don't know who to cheer for. I know who not to cheer for.
It's pretty clear. Yeah.
That
I will never root for the New York Yankees.
Well, you won't root for the Blue Jays. You won't root for the Yankees.
I won't root against them. I'll root against the Yankees. I won't root against the Blue Jays.
That's the conversation we have all the time, though.
Yeah.
It's the highs and the lows, right?
Yeah. And it also depends on the situation. What is going on in the playoffs? You know, I had a soft spot for Texas Rangers last year because they never won before and they got real close. And, you know, the Cardinals had won recently. So, you know, I was kind of rooting for the Rangers. It depends on the situation of the playoffs at the time, what team is on, who's on the team.
Well, then you're rooting for the fans, right?
I'm rooting for the fans.
Sort of like the Kings this year. It was easier for people to root for the Kings than it was to root for the Devils.
Yes.
But the Devils have had success and the Kings have been in the league since the Leafs.
Yes.
Less than the Leafs won the cup.
You kind of root for the city instead of the actual team itself.
Yeah, pretty
much.
Which
is why I have a problem with the Toronto Blue Jays. Not that I hate Toronto. I just, whatever, I'm supposed to, right? I'm from Montreal.
I don't know. A lot of people.
I don't really hate Toronto. They're hard on them. Everybody's hard on them, but I don't know. It's just fun not to root for them, I guess.
It seems like there's supposed to be that natural rivalry between Toronto and Montreal.
I don't really feel it anymore.
I personally don't think it exists.
No, I mean, it does exist. It does.
Not
it does. We're just speaking a language where it doesn't really exist.
No, we're living in a time where both cities have mediocre hockey teams, and that used to be the barometer of the rivalry.
Well, both cities have bad hockey teams, not mediocre.
Did I say mediocre?
You
oh, pardon
mediocre.
Me. Pardon
bad.
Me for being diplomatic. It's my Olympic speak.
Yeah, those are two bad hockey teams.
And I don't know that either has really greatly improved so much.
No. But there's one thing about the Blue Jays, though. Seeing them so often on TV.
Bam, the phone lines light up. Yeah.
Seeing them so often on TV, I've kind of gotten a little bit of an affinity for the team. I like their team. I like the guys on their team. They're likable, you know? Joey Batts and Lowry and all these guys.
And, you know, for as much as they're liked, they are the worst snake bit bad luck baseball team I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen a team compile injuries at the rate that the Toronto Blue Jays have.
Yeah.
And you know, and
their
the guys
entire pitching staff is decimated.
Except for Ricky Romero, who seems to have, you know, he put all of this on his shoulders, it seems.
I know.
And his head has now collapsed. I feel so bad for the kid. I really think that the answer for him is to go down to the Triple A.
There was a lot of pressure put on him after the guys started going down, and everybody looked to him to be their ace. And the poor guy really, that's baseball for you.
So what are you thinking? Maniac trading deadline issues can't come on with us right now?
It could be.
All right.
It could be. We would always forgive him, though.
Of course.
He is a former Expo.
He's a good friend of the show and a big fan of our city.
Yeah.
And the only reason that any of you ever got a quote out of Vladimir Guerrero in his early years in Montreal was because of Maniac.
That's right.
Manny was Vladdy's translator.
Yeah. And if he's trying to make that team better right now, well, God bless him. Let's leave him alone.
Yeah. So like I was saying off the top, the Indians for me are one of those teams that, And full disclosure, because of Manny Acta, I find them a lot easier to cheer for. I latch on to guys. I mean, I feel it less so. I know that the Baltimore Orioles are the team in MLB with the most former Expos. But it's three guys that I could care less about. I think it's Nick Johnson, Luis Ayala, and, oh, help me out. Was it Andy Chavez, I think?
I like Andy Chavez.
Right, but
he was exciting when he played here. He also has one of the greatest catches in the history of Major League Baseball.
As a New York Met.
Yeah, not as, well, of course not.
Which, you're right, yeah. It
would have had to have been a playoff game.
Well, you know that catch would be so much more famous if they'd won the game? The fact that it still is something is kind of cool, but the Mets lost that game.
Yeah,
that was game seven. Mm-hmm. It was Carlos Beltran, right?
Yeah.
Who I found out today from Ben Christensen is part of a very exclusive club in baseball.
Oh, yeah. 300 home runs, 300 stolen bases club. Only seven guys, and Carlos Beltran is the seventh guy to do it.
Ben gave
300
me,
home runs and 300 stolen bases.
Ben gave me 20 chances to get it, and I did not
I know Andre Dawson is one of them.
That is one.
He's very good.
I know Bobby Bonds and Barry Bonds are both part of that.
Jay Farrar.
Second and fourth.
Yeah. 300 home runs and 300 stolen bases.
Tough one, eh?
Give me a while.
There's a couple of real randoms on that
three
list.
Three for three right off the bat. That was quite impressive.
Yeah, you know.
So we have Beltran. And
I'm just a baseball fan.
So I'm missing
fan.
Three more after that.
No,
that
so you have both Bonds, you have Dawson, and I gave you Beltran, or actually he did.
Yeah.
So you have three more.
Three more.
Okay. For those of you tuning in, this was supposed to be an interview with Manny Acta. This is what we call killing time on the talking show.
That's okay. We can talk about anything. I don't care.
Well, that's okay. We've got.
I'll get upset about something.
We've got the number one baseball fan in North America in studio with
us.
Yes,
he is.
That's frankly very exciting.
It is.
I think we're going to have to do a little. I know it's radio, but we'll live tweet it. We're going to have to do a little bit of a show and tell later.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because Ben is known as a bit of a tattoo enthusiast.
A little bit.
And you got a new one this week.
Yeah.
To complement the 30-odd ones that you have of Major League Baseball. Well, you have 30, right? 30 Major League mascots tattooed on your body.
Absolutely.
Can you describe the Pittsburgh Pirates one real quick for our fans?
Doc Ellis, no-hitter, LSD. It's probably the quickest way to do it.
And, that's
perfect. Yeah.
Another 8 hours and you'll come around.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I'm good to go. Yeah.
Well, thank you for babysitting, Mr. Farrar. We greatly appreciate it. So we'd like to thank Manny Acta. And we will retool and
something
come back.
Something you said, Dave?
No.
Come on.
No. It's trading deadline
day. Steph say something to him on the phone?
Manny Acta is a busy man.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
He told us he would call in at 7:15. We will strive to get him back on air as soon as possible. And, hey, if he calls in, we'll make some time for him, right?
To Manny Acta, of course.
In the meanwhile, just know why we played Lookout Cleveland off the top of the segment. And going out on a little
there
bit.
There is a relevance.
Some Randy Newman here. Well, it's we can pretend this is Major League all over again. But frankly, Major League makes me think more of the 03 Expos and the 2012 Oakland Athletics.
Ooh.
So when we get back after the break, what the hell, let's talk some more baseball.
Okay.
This is The Kauffman Show.
karma's gonna get you. Gonna knock you right on the head. You better get yourself together. Pretty soon you're gonna be dead.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, special in studio guest Ben Christensen, and we've got a little surprise for you guys right now. We're going to bring in one of the greatest home run hitters of all time. He wrote an article. He's going to be published every Monday in Vice magazine. You can go to vice.com. His every week it's going to be Jose Canseco doing Jose Canseco. This week he talks about gun control, and we're going to bring him on to the program. Welcome him back to the Kaufman Show in Montreal. Hello, Jose Canseco. How are you, sir?
Good. How you guys doing?
Good, good. Nice to hear from you, man. Good to see that you're writing again.
Oh, yeah. I've written a few books, and I have my own column. When given an interesting perspective on certain ideas and theories and on subject matters.
When did you get the idea to get back into this? When, like, did you approach Vice, or did they approach you?
No, actually, Vice approached me about doing columns on certain subject matters, so I think it's great. I think you're going to hear very truthful, upfront opinion.
I'm sorry, Jose, can you repeat that? We lost you.
Hello, can you hear me?
Now we can hear you perfectly, yes.
Okay. I said, yeah, Vice approached me, and basically you're going to hear some very, upfront, truthful opinions on certain subject matters.
Good. And you've started by tackling a very sensitive issue right now. You say that the article is headlined, Control the People, Not the Guns, and you address the Aurora situation in the Second Amendment. Can you summarize it for our listeners?
I mean, well, it's real simple. People believe that, guns kill people, but they don't. People kill people, period. And in a nutshell, you really think about it, that the government has nuclear weapons. All their countries have nuclear weapons. And basically, why other countries have nuclear weapons? Because it's just a deterrent. So if you're going to an environment where you believe other individuals have the same weapons themselves, you're going to think twice about doing the actual deed. Meaning what that kid did, attack those soft targets, they call them, not soft targets if they actually have weapons on them, equal weapons, like that the kid going in there.
No, I get what you're saying.
Five or six.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I find it to be a little bit of a, well, obviously it's a controversial statement, and keep in mind that I'm Canadian and you're speaking to a Canadian audience, and our views on gun control are a little bit different. But the idea of going to a movie theater and thinking, well, I should have to pack a gun in case this happens, seems like a very scary world to live in.
It is a very scary world, and that's what people are not really grasping. At any point in time, the world could end, nuclear warfare. At any point in time, a meteor can hit this world, and it could end. At any point in time, in any environment, under any situation, anyone could shoot anyone. And you have to be prepared. You have to be aware of it, and you have to be prepared for it. What better way to be able to defend yourself to carry a weapon on you, knowing too much about it? I'm very pro-gun, and I'm very pro-protection, and you should be able to do anything possible to protect yourself and your family.
You live in California where guns, you're not allowed to carry a gun, but when you lived in Miami, were the rules different?
Yeah, I mean, in the 80s, with all the drugs being thrown around in Miami, and you know, Miami at one point was the most corrupt city in the United States, and I think Miami was developed by drug money. So there were so many individuals that believed that the only way to deter that and to protect themselves is by carrying guns, no question but about it.
If you could, would you? Right now, you would carry a gun?
Are you kidding me? I carry a hand grenade, a machine gun, an Uzi, an AK-47, and a nuclear warhead. Definitely. And I would let everyone know that so they would not mess with me. No ifs and buts about it.
Wow, that absolutely seems like a, you know, I've heard you say a lot of wild things before, but this one, this was one that I cannot get around. I can't get behind that one. It seems like
maybe the nuclear warhead, but you realize you might be taking yourself with him on that one.
Well, Well, hey, as long as they realize they're coming with me, they would definitely think twice about it.
Jose, let's shift gears to something else. What else are you up to right now?
I think I'm going to be very much involved with the Celebrity Exes, which I'm sure you guys have seen on VH1 in the second season.
Sure.
Working on some other reality TV shows. Obviously, I do appearances. Just got finished playing independent baseball, which I kind of like have to admit that father time is getting to me. I'm just turned 48. I think I'm maybe a little bit too old physically to play the game. So it's definitely a young man's sport. It's not the fact that just playing the game physically, meaning hitting a baseball, it's the injuries, the recovery time, it's just not there. So
I'd also imagine buses isn't the most fun thing to do as a 48-year-old, right?
Oh, yeah, those 15-hour buses, believe me, destroy your actual legs. So it's difficult. It is a young man's game. And, you know, I played professionally 21 years, 17 years in the major league. And I think my next step might be managing a team. That's about it.
Now, you did a bit of managing in California last year, didn't you?
I managed Yuma Scorpions, which in Yuma, Arizona. And talk about the hottest weather possible, talking about a very strange situation. I obviously managed and played at the same time, which wearing two hats is extremely difficult. I will never do that again. Either I play 100% as DH or just manage and don't play at all.
Yeah, it's very old school, the player coach thing. I mean, you go back to like Lou Boudreau, I think, was the last big player coach.
Yeah, I mean, you got to kind of take your hats off these guys. It's so difficult to actually do that. To be able to develop a relationship with the players and then be able to cut them at the same time and be respected as a manager, then kind of try to have chemistry with them. Different chemistry between a player and a manager and a player and a player. So it was extremely difficult for me at the time.
We're just finishing up with baseball legend Jose Canseco. Jose, do you watch the Olympics?
I have not. I've been extremely busy now. I've moved back to California to try to get this TV shows off the ground. But I heard there's some kind of interesting stories.
Yeah, well, I think the Olympics are always a great, a great place to watch and see young and up-and-coming amateur athletes. I find it to be very different from especially like the obsession and the fandom is so different from that with professional sports.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. The only thing I don't like about, let's say, in the sense of these athletes, they're not getting paid any money. Amateur sports, obviously college, when you talk about the big sport of football, I mean, these colleges are making hundreds of millions, and these players are making no money whatsoever and basically living off peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and starving. To me, that's the most pathetic, unrealistic thing I've ever heard in my life. It's kind of like hypocrisy at its best. The colleges are benefiting from these athletes, exploiting them, and the athletes are making no money. That's terrible. It's so pathetic. It makes me sick.
Jose, what can we expect next week in Vice Magazine?
They're going to bring up a very touchy subject matter, like always, and I will give you a very honest opinion on it. That's about it.
I look forward to reading it. Jose Canseco is the name of the column. Jose Canseco is the author, and we really appreciate your time, Jose.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Thanks. Have a great night. How's that for a surprise, everybody?
Yeah.
Jose Canseco.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, Ben, you're a bit of an A's fan there.
So a little bit.
That must be kind of exciting.
That it was.
Did you hear his phone go off in the middle of the interview?
Oh, was that him?
Jeez. Unbelievable.
It's like he had an alarm set or something.
Yeah, I can't believe it.
That's okay. It didn't ruin the audio of anything impactful that he was saying or anything, right?
Yeah.
Steph, sorry, man. I guess we're going to do the news update a little bit late right now, right?
Yeah, we're going to do it at 8.
Okay, perfect.
Maybe it was his nuclear warhead. I don't know what it was.
How about we take a commercial break, get Mark McGuire and Cardi Lansford on the phone?
Don't forget about Mike Gallego, although he's back to be coaching here in a minute. So
this is the Kaufman Dave Show. We're going to take a quick break.
I want Dave Parker.
I want Terry Stein back. But you
know
what?
Tony Phillips?
You can't get everything that you ask for. You can get Jose Canseco, maybe Walt Weiss. Maybe.
Walt Weiss.
Ron Hassie.
Dave Stewart.
That'd be a good one.
Ron Hassie would be a good one.
That'd be a very good one.
We're coming off the 21st anniversary of the perfect game.
That's correct.
Dodger Stadium. This is the Kaufman Show, and that was a little surprise cameo by Jose Canseco. We'll be back.
I was the best thing you ever had. I know I was. but swapping is your feature. You know that it would suit you. Yes, the stereotypes. There must be more to life.
Well, welcome back to the Kaufman Show. That was an interesting...
People have to understand how that just went down. I think it's important that people know exactly what happened during the commercial break.
Yeah, I think we'll call that went down organically.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, it's clear that Maniacta obviously had bigger fish to fry. We don't blame him. Obviously, he's a busy man. It's a trade and all that stuff going on today. But Kaufman picks up his cell phone during the break. We're all just sitting around watching him. And he says, and then he got Dave Kaufman's secretary voice on, and he's like, "Oh, hello, Jose. Hi, it's Dave Kaufman calling from TSN 990. So I didn't know who he was talking to, and I said, "Jose, okay, so we got another ball player. All right, that's good." Because it's Jose, and that was racist. And so Dave says, "Yeah, okay." And I said, "Okay." And he doesn't say anything. He goes right back to his computer. He says, "Okay, thanks. We'll call you back in about 2 minutes, and we'll have our producer, Steph, call him." And he just looks back at his computer. So the rest of us are just sitting here, staring at Dave, saying, "Yeah, okay, tough guy. Who'd you just get?" He's like, "Yeah, that was Jose Canseco." Like, it's nothing. Like, he does this all the time. Great instincts, Mr. Kaufman.
Thanks.
Called Jose Canseco out of the blue. Got him on the show.
I saw on the news today that he had a new article up, and he's going to be writing a column for Vice magazine.
Yeah.
And
it's relevant as well.
It was. I mean, it was, you know, it's not often that we get that point of view on our show.
Yes.
We're pretty pro gun control on this show. We're yes, pretty,
mostly. Yeah.
I'd even go anti-gun on this show.
Yes.
So to hear Jose Canseco come on the Kaufman Show and say that he would like to walk around armed with a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
That was some really interesting stuff.
I have no problem with nuclear weapons.
I have no problem with bringing on Jose Canseco and hearing his opinions on things.
That's right.
And I'm telling you, 8-year-old Dave Kaufman is totally high-fiving himself right now for getting Jose Canseco.
No, he's bash-brothering himself.
That's right. So that was very interesting, a very different conversation than the one that we would have had with Maniacta. I promise you that one would not have touched on gun control. We probably would have talked about baseball a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it was nice to talk a little bit about, you know, the great tradition of player coaches from Lou Boudreau to Jose Canseco.
Yeah, the second part anyway. I mean, he's not a guy, and we talked about this, he's not a guy that I'm going to come on here and argue with.
No.
You know, you're just going to, well, first, because he's a 6'4", 250-pound martial arts expert, yeah, according to Vice. And but you know what? You just want to let this guy go. Let him say what he's going to say, and Kaufman and I will discuss the gun control issue some other time.
That's right. And you know, sometimes we're accused of purely being left-leaning and never giving the other side's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we're so...
I'm not left-leaning.
Where do you lean?
I lean both ways.
Really?
Yes.
How do you lean... How does one lean both ways?
I have conservative viewpoints, and I have liberal viewpoints as well.
Okay. It's not fair to paint with such a wide brush.
Mm-hmm.
And you may have your
I don't
views,
like but guns, but I'll hit my kids. You know, I will.
Oh my God.
I will. I don't care. Yeah.
Well,
I don't like slaughtering animals for no reason. But I'm okay with hunting if you eat the thing. So
I don't think
I go in both ways.
I don't think that the left is anti. If somebody's hungry, let them kill their dinner. I don't think that the left.
Some of them are.
And some of the right are totally nuts, too.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair look, if you're going to make me, if you're going to put one of Jose Canseco's nuclear weapons to my head and make me pick a side, it'll be the opposite side of Mr. Canseco.
Yeah.
But the guy told the truth.
As he
says
sees
what he believes.
Sure.
I don't even mean in this instance. Yeah. I don't think that what he's, truth is relative when it comes to opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
But he wrote a book many, 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 many years ago called Juiced, and it named names. And look, nobody likes, for lack of a better term, a rat. But at the end of the day, if there's a reason that baseball is cleaner right now, it all stems from that. That's the reason the Mitchell Report got written. It's nice to talk a little bit of a controversial side of baseball with you, Mr. Christensen.
What did you think
about
that?
Controversy in baseball, to be honest with you.
What did you think about Jose Canseco there?
No, that was actually...
I'm sure he was one of your childhood heroes as well.
Oh, he definitely was. Yeah. I had the Canseco 40-40 poster on my wall.
You still got it?
I've got the Bash Brothers one still.
Okay.
The 40-40 one, I think, suffered some water damage back when I was about 9 years old in the move from Stockton, California to Bakersfield. So, yeah, that was kind of unfortunate.
It happens.
But I also still have the starting lineup character for both McGuire and Jose Canseco and Carney Lansford, for that matter.
That just shows how popular starting lineup figurines used to be, that there was a Carney Lansford one.
Yeah.
That's kind of intense. I don't think I had any randoms. I had Tim Raines and Dawson, though.
Ooh.
Yeah, Raines is an Expo. Dawson is a Cub.
I think Schmidt was my other one. And,
oh, and Carter is a Met, actually. And I will I look at you and point like, oh, Carter, because you're wearing the true rivalry.
We didn't mention what he is wearing.
Yeah, exactly.
Ben's rocking an Expos hat and the Gary Carter tribute T-shirt that was made by Anakin Slade and Jason Portnoy from True Rivalry, mm-hmm. where proceeds from the shirt went to the Gary Carter Foundation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good on you, man.
Hey, appreciate that.
And it's nice to know. And even in your bio on Twitter, Shaka Brody on Twitter, it says that you're an Expos fan, that you're an A's fan and an Expos fan.
Always going to be an Expos fan.
Well, that's cool. We appreciate that.
You're welcome.
And, you know, we don't hate the A's, so we're even.
You really can't.
No, that's actually a team that I do cheer for. We were talking about before. I look at the A's sometimes like, yeah, way to go, guys. Go ahead. Yeah, get that done, man.
Mm-hmm. It's easy.
Especially lately.
It's easy to
cheer. After you threw out the first pitch.
That was amazing. That was something else, man, to watch. I mean, I didn't see it live. Max the Guru was live tweeting it the whole time.
And yeah.
We saw some pictures pretty quickly. And I got to say, I think Max deserves a big thank you for helping you throw a strike, because he went on practice with you the day before.
Oh, absolutely. I was beyond rusty in the first few throws I had. It's just like, wow, it's been a couple years.
Did you stand on a mound when you guys practiced?
Yeah, we did. We went to a ballpark in Golden Gate Park, and there was a bit of a divot in the mound or right in front of the rubber, so it was a little bit more difficult for me, especially wearing Chuck Taylor's. Can't get a little grip wearing those.
No. The Oakland A's have now won, is it 8 of their last 9?
Or
8 of their last 10?
8 of the last 10.
8 of their last 10, which included a 7-game winning streak. The game that Ben threw out the first pitch was the first game of that winning streak.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool stuff.
9 of the last 11. Sorry.
9 of their last 11.
My apologies.
That's okay. You can apologize all you want. The A's are in the wild card right now.
That's correct.
And they're actually
in the first wild card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is heady days, my friend.
Oop.
I can only imagine that feeling, and the thing I go back to is 2003, because that was the year that, you know, a month from now, the end of August, the Expos made it to the pinnacle of where they'd ever make it, you know, in the 2000s at least. It was the last time that they were in a tie for the wild card. It was a 4-way tie on the last day of August, and the entire season long, I was scoreboard watching. I don't know if you do the same thing now.
Every day.
Okay.
I mean, end of July, I mean, still got 2 months to go, and I'm still scoreboard watching every single day.
Well, it's hard not to as a fan, and there's nothing better than looking at a box score, or looking at the standings, and seeing that your team is in a playoff spot.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to be terrified the whole time. I mean, the Angels just dealt for Zach Greinke.
And he lost.
One game.
Well, no, I mean,
2-0. It's hard to win a game when your team doesn't score any runs.
For a guy who hadn't lost at home in Milwaukee, and then he comes in his first home game with the Angels, he loses. There's got to be something said about that.
Well, yeah, but it was a home game in Milwaukee. I mean, I don't think he's quite comfortable in Anaheim yet.
So what?
One of the big things about Zach Greinke was how he adapted to pressure and wanted to play. And I mean, he took some time off baseball.
Yes.
Because he had some issues and wanted to step back and sort of reorganize his thoughts.
Yeah.
Perhaps playing in Los Angeles isn't going to be beneficial for him.
That's true. And, I mean, I'm not going to say he had a terrible game. I mean, he got the loss, true. But then again, I mean, when you get shut out 2-0, I mean, there's not much as a pitcher you can really do on top of that. He held his composure really well. I'll give him that. I think he had, 9 or 10 strikeouts? I know 8 for sure. But, yeah, when you get no production from your bats, then there's not much you can really do with that.
Right. I mean, I don't know what his line was, but 2 runs were scored against that team in the game. So
yeah.
You can't blame Zach Greinke for that. The thing is, what happens if Texas or Anaheim goes after Cliff Lee?
We were talking about this earlier. I'm actually kind of banking on the Rangers hopefully getting Cliff Lee for the sake of if he's going to post the same numbers he did last season, or his short time in Texas with a 4-6 with a 3.98 ERA. I say go for it. It's more power to the A's right there.
Wow. I look at it as a playoff move.
I agree.
He's so dominating in the playoffs. He's had the most hard luck season. You'd think he was a Blue Jay. I think the Blue Jays wish they had Cliff Lee, actually.
Yeah.
But it took him so long to win his first game.
And I was at one of the games that he lost the day that I got kicked out of the fan cave.
And so was that? Was it the Phillies Mets?
May 28th.
Okay,
I believe it was.
Okay,
and he dealt well. I'll give him that. And then just bullpen collapse, or they won. The Phillies won, but just for some reason they didn't get enough runs to surpass the Mets enough time.
Forever proof that a win really isn't that telling a stat in baseball.
Correct.
And the whole 20 game winners. Another great barometer of what a good pitcher is a 20-game loser.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got to be a damn good pitcher for them to throw you in after that many losses.
Yeah.
And someone like, I think it happened.
And to pitch that many innings where the tide in the game, you're still around for the tide in the game to change.
That's right.
And it becomes a loss. It doesn't usually happen right in the first inning,
So. Oh, no, exactly. Exactly. It's there's so many more accurate ways. And we've discussed this with Travis Reitzma. We've discussed this on the show before. But the modern baseball statistic, it may seem a little daunting to some of you. Frankly, it's sometimes a little bit daunting to me. But it's so much more accurate. And it gives you such a better indication of the guys who do this stuff from the science point of view really have it down pat. And I don't think that any sport matches it. I'm starting to see metrics in hockey, and I'm trying to wrap my head around them. We'll see if we get there by the time the season starts.
Yeah. There's people are going to realize that there's a lot of, in the mechanics of the game, when you actually play the game, you realize that there are some stats that are completely worthless.
Mm-hmm.
Saves, wins, things like that are just, they just really don't describe the player.
Batting average is pretty.
Batting averages is, that's one of the ones that is on the edge, I'd much rather go with on-base percentage.
Right.
Way
more accurate of a stat as to the
trying to
the
keep it as
layman.
I'm not talking about all the other ones, the
FIPs and the wars.
But the
war one's very interesting. The science behind it complicates it and makes it harder for the.
I never got past grade 9 math, so I'm in trouble.
Yeah, but you know what? I always sucked at any kind of science unless there was baseball involved.
Yeah. Mm.
And once you used baseball to apply a certain reality to whatever mathematics I was being forced to learn, I got it. Mm-hmm. And when I was able to say to my teacher, the door just closed in here, and I got a little bit distracted.
Yeah. At least it wasn't my phone this time.
Can you please make this? I thought we were going to play that on Conseco.
His nuclear warhead.
No, and I would say to my teacher, please, if you can try and make this applicable in a way that I would understand. And it happened without fail every time. If you made it something about, and another example of that is, stats with politics. I can wrap my head around it a lot easier than I can if it's about fill in the blank.
Right.
But something that I find intimidating.
Yeah.
And because I don't find the game of baseball intimidating, I don't find the mathematics behind it intimidating.
I always thought my math teacher was a fascist jerk, making me do things the way that he wanted in the formulas. Well, I got the answer right. Well, show me how you got it. It doesn't matter how I got it.
But that's, I remember that. That was a big
part
of it.
I worked it out in a certain way that I knew how, because my brain only works on one side.
Yeah,
the
but
other
I think
side
part
doesn't
of that,
work very well.
Part of the whole showing your work was that you
didn't, that I didn't cheat.
You didn't just lean over and look what Steph Hamel had written on his paper and take that.
Yeah.
So, I would definitely
look at his paper. He looked like one of those guys that was smart.
Of the four of us in this studio,
yeah.
Steph Hamel was the one that we're cheating off. For sure.
He wasn't smoking pot or cutting class like. Well, I'm not going to distinguish who would have done that in this studio, but we'll just say.
Let's just say that of the four of us, maybe one person might have done half of those things.
Okay. There's some math for yourself. There you go, Mr. Hudkins, you fascist.
That's how
we worked out our math.
I don't know about you, Jay Farrar, but I was watching baseball.
Okay.
I was watching Jose Canseco hit home runs and telling me how to live clean. I couldn't even say it with a straight face. I'd like to thank Jose Canseco for appearing on the program on such short notice. As you said, a last-minute phone call. For some reason, I managed to get him on a show a couple of years ago on the station and held on to the number.
Yeah.
So good thing he was writing in Vice magazine.
Anybody engages that nuclear warhead, just make sure Batman gets there in time,
please. Can we just give some, if you're going to approach Jose Canseco on the street, just make sure it's in the great state of California.
Mm-hmm.
Because as he's very clearly states in his article on Vice, he's not allowed to be armed. And as you heard on the show tonight, he would arm himself to the teeth if given the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
That was one of the greatest home run hitters of all time.
Yep.
This is the Kauffman Show. When we return, we'll be joined by Chris McCashew. And we're going to talk a little bit about the business of the Olympics, which is, I think we're going to shift gears from here on in. And no more steroid talk, no more...
gun control?
No more...
math?
Sure. Done. No, I promise.
Please.
I promise you no more math.
Thank you.
Okay, that one, you've got the, the guarantee. I promise you. How long are we going on break for here, Steph?
I would say around 5 minutes.
Okay, so I want to come up with a mathematical equation for this.
Okay.
You know, like 5 60-second segments. Hopefully they play the Minnesota Spankology Institute one. I love that one.
Hit your kids. It's good for you. It's good for them.
But don't buy guns.
Don't buy guns.
Jay, we're going to make a poster out of that.
Yeah.
This is the Kauffman Show. A very interesting first hour. I hope you all feel how I feel. We'll be back. Like that version, Jay?
I like every version of everything that guy has done.
I am a fan of... Yeah.
He does nice, tame songs, and it's like they're on steroids after that.
He does wonderful covers, though. I'm a big fan of Hendrix's covers.
Right.
And one of the great stories is that the first time he heard this song was the week that Sgt. Pepper's came out, and by the next night after he'd bought the album, the song was in his set list. In his concert the next day.
Of course.
McCartney talks about how he saw him play the week that it came out, the album came out, and saw Hendrix playing the song.
Hendrix takes Barry Bonds with a small head in a Pirates uniform and makes it into Barry Bonds with a big head in a Giants uniform. That's what he does for Dylan songs.
Well put.
And Beatles songs.
And now, let's move off the steroids and let's talk about the Olympics.
It's a segue.
Because as we said, people aren't getting kicked out of the Olympics for steroids anymore. They're getting kicked out for Twitter, which is quite an interesting world. And I guess we call that progress.
Well, there were a couple, I think, Turkish athletes that were sent back.
There was a Greek athlete that was sent home last week, and there was another athlete that was sent home, I believe, today.
I think it was another Greek.
Was it?
I believe so.
Man, Jay.
We've got like six guys in there. Leave us alone.
All right, let's bring in our next guest. His name is Chris McCashew. And he's an agent. He's the head of sprint management, which is part of the Surin Group, works with a good couple of dozen Olympic athletes, I think even more, actually. And we're going to have a little bit of a conversation about the Olympics and, hey, business. Who knew that Olympics and business went together? Everybody from Kodak to Coca-Cola, I guess. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
How are you?
Not too bad. I'm a little bit pumped up after Jose's interview there, so I just want to keep the ball going.
That was a little bit of a surprise. As long as you don't have controversial views on gun control, I think we're going to get along just fine.
I might just mix them up just to be relevant.
So, Chris, you're off to London in a couple of days, right?
You know what? Actually, I'm staying home. I do what I call run mission control for my Montreal office. I'm heading over after the games until about the 16th of September.
Oh, boy. So that leads to, I guess, a lot of very early mornings for you working, huh?
Yeah, it sure does. It's kind of the joy of the business. I've done 53 flights this year already, so I needed a little time home with my wife. It's been it's been quite the season for us also.
Yeah, but, you know, it's not like you can devote time to your wife and family. You're stuck on the couch watching the Olympics.
Yeah, it's actually more than that. I'm sitting there watching the Olympics, and I'm also watching Twitter as well. Just like you mentioned earlier, there's been a lot of controversy going on the last few days with Olympic athletes, and it was one Greek triple jumper as well as a Swiss soccer player today.
Okay.
He got sent home for racial remarks.
And I imagine, well, I know that the Canadian Olympic Committee basically has a meeting with everybody beforehand and says, you know, don't be stupid, And right. I guess you just sort of reaffirm that to your clients?
Well, yeah, of course. That's exactly what I do. I sit down and we go over all the messaging. And even some of the sponsors have said, look, we would like certain messages portrayed during the games. And we go ahead and do that as long as it falls within Rule 40, which has been another controversial issue during the games.
That's the sponsorship, you can't wear somebody else's logo type stuff?
Exactly. If you're not an IOC or National Federation partner, you can't wear, you cannot promote, you want to call them non-allowed brands.
Well, you know, and that even happened. I mean, that carried over at the Vancouver Olympics. Fans were asked to duct tape different logos that weren't part of the IOC family.
Yeah, no, and that happens normal on the track. The track circuit when we're overseas, it's an Adidas event. Adidas will ask that all Nike athletes and others to duct tape up logos just because Adidas is paying X amount of dollars to be there as a partner.
Why is it that they make everything so hard for amateur athletes?
To be honest with you, I really don't quite get it, and that's what I've been trying to do quite a bit this season, is try and find some new avenues that we can exploit that, you know what, might put a few extra dollars in an athlete's pockets. And I said this yesterday in an interview. I said, the difference between a gold medal and making a final might only be 10 grand, and what's 10 grand to the average person? I mean, to an athlete, it makes all the difference. It goes between, it makes a difference between eating a normal, like a normal diet and eating craft dinner.
We see an example today in the pool of Missy Franklin winning a gold for America. Now, she's got dual citizenship.
Yeah,
assuming that at some point she made the decision to compete for the U.S. And you know, that's got to be a really easy call. And have you ever dealt with that? Have you ever had a client who has dual citizenship and has to make that decision?
You know what I do? I have a Haitian athlete who has U.S. and Haiti citizenship, and he's decided to jump for Haiti. He's actually been in the news quite a bit lately. He was Mark Zuckerberg's Harvard roommate first year of school. So
wow.
Everyone across the board has been picking him up from Bloomberg to CNN. It's been quite the little story.
Huh. And why would he have chosen to, I mean, you would think that the choice in that situation would be to go with the U.S. because the funding would be there, the incentives would be there, the potential for sponsorships and advertising and, you know, being on a Wheaties box and all the rest of that.
For him, it made a few different reasons. What went down in Haiti was one of the big issues for him. He said, you know what, I want to give back. And by making an Olympic team, it does give a little bit of hope to the country. And his whole mission is he's looking for partners, or I should say strategic partners, that won't only invest in him, but will also invest into Haiti to kind of help regrow what has been, I don't want to say blown up, but what has fallen apart.
Wow, that's somebody who's putting a lot on his shoulders, eh?
Yeah, he is. And when push comes to shove, it's not so easy to make a very depth United States team, whereas Haiti, there's four of them at the games in track and field.
This is something that I find that we see with the amateur athlete. They have causes. They seem to be more willing to be outspoken about social issues than you see from professional athletes. And I guess part of that might come from the fact that they're not, you know, ham-fisted by these massive contracts and the expectations of corporations.
Right. No, you're exactly right. I mean, amateur athletes work for every dollar they make. And in athletics specifically, I would say only 1% of the athletes are actually making a good living. The rest are living at that poverty level, if not just below.
So that would mean that you have roughly 30 athletes under you, right?
Yeah, 30, 35, somewhere there. And I do have some top-tiered athletes who do have Olympic and World Championship medals who do very well and are faces of all those campaigns, whether it be a Cheerios box or Visa or Pampers or whatever it happens to be.
Right, but again, that makes up for such a small percentage. And I'm wondering, like, as somebody's agent, obviously you're part of their team. You're part of their team from A to Z. Which means
you're from A to Z, I basically eat, breathe, and sleep athlete. It's quite the little story. I mean, we go from booking their competitions overseas, whether it be Europe or Asia or Australia, also North America, but the market here is not as big, whereas overseas we'll pull in 65,000 to 70,000 fans at a meet. To doing the tickets, the media, the marketing, they also have to submit what's called whereabouts. And essentially what that is you have to let the National Federation as well as the World Anti-Doping Association know where the athlete is 24 hours a day, and also have a one-hour window where you can get a surprise drug test.
Wow.
So to kind of kick back to some of the baseball jokes earlier, that would actually be a pretty good thing for them.
Well, yeah, but except that in baseball they do that, and then they hire a high-priced lawyer and figure out a way out of it.
And overlook it.
I mean, we saw that with Ryan Braun this year, where the sample stayed in the most reputable guy's basement in the fridge for 3 days, and they said, well, he could have tampered with it.
That's right, and it's such a crazy process. I'm probably one of the few people that have actually been into the World Anti-Doping location here in Laval, Quebec, and I felt like I was going to jail. It was absolutely unreal the amount of security they have in there.
Hmm. Well, which I understand. I mean, it's obviously it's IOC regulated. You know, those guys don't mess around.
Yep. I would just like to see that same sort of testing, I mean, across the board, whether it's baseball or hockey or even golf. There's been positive tests come out in the last few years as well.
Do you think
standardized testing?
Do you think that we're going to see a clean games this year?
Definitely not. There's already been. I think there's a positive test that came out a few days ago from, I want to say, a Kazakhstan weightlifter.
Okay, I missed that.
Which again, it's a very dirty sport in its own. So,
well, but at the end of the day, what's considered a clean sport? I mean,
very few.
Right. I mean, track and field is renowned for it.
Of course, and specifically in Canada, it's kind of sad that, but most Canadians still have that image of Ben Johnson running across the finish line with his hand in the air. And then you've got some awesome clients of mine like Bruni Cernan and Donovan Bailey who went through their entire career being clean, and still there's that still subjectivity of, well, maybe they weren't because Ben was. And then you flip it across into the United States and you've got, I mean, a ton of Americans who have tested positive and who are now running again at these Olympic Games and are now the pride of their country.
Which I guess at the end of the day makes it your job even harder as somebody who's trying to get these guys to make a living off it if the public perception is that it's not a clean sport.
Of course, it's a very tough sell. But again, those that do merit or do get the sponsorships are doing very well with them.
We're in a conversation with Chris McCashew from Sprint Management. You can follow him on Twitter at @Sprint_Management. Can you tell our audience about a few of your clients beyond Bruni Cernan and Donovan Bailey, maybe some of the athletes to watch right now in London?
Sure. I mean, we can start with some Canadians. I've got two Canadian hurdlers over there that came out of the woodworks last season. Going to the season, they were 300th in the world, and right now they're 8th and 11th from Toronto area, Felicia George, as well as Nikita Holder.
Yes, we had Felicia on the program a couple of weeks ago.
No,
thank
I
you for that.
I remember that very well. I sat there with giggling. I specifically when you asked her the question, and I could see her face light up. She's like, oh, you spoke to Chris for sure. those two are out there. We've got Justin Warner in the men's 100, and he's the only Canadian to be on the Olympic team and the first Canadian in the 100 Open since. One of your next guests, Nick, was Macrozaneras, who also was a client of mine as well. So going to some other events, the 200, we've got some more Canadians, Jared Connaughton, as well as Tremaine Harris. But one kid I would look out for is in the men's 400. He's from Dominican Republic. He's 18 years old, the world junior champion, and the second fastest in the world right now.
Wow. And does he train in Canada?
No, he's based out of Santo Domingo.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you really have an international client list then.
Sure, yeah. I've got some Jamaicans on there as well. They didn't make the team because of the depth over there, but they'll be competing up until the end of September.
Well, that must affect your allegiances as a good Canadian boy, no?
Oh, I have a great time with it. And, I mean, a lot of the Jamaicans call me the Canadian Jamaican. And we've kind of infiltrated some of our Jamaicans into Canada, and they hang out more with us than the Jamaicans overseas. So we have a good time, and that's what you got to do at the end of the day. If you don't enjoy what you're doing, you're working for the wrong reasons.
This is kind of like the Summer Olympics version of Cool Running suddenly.
No, it's exactly what it is.
Chris, when does track and field get underway in earnest?
I would like to say I know the answer to that. I think, truthfully, Friday it starts. I'm actually really looking forward to women's hurdles. It's one of my favorite events, and it's a little unfortunate that one of my top clients didn't make the team because of the depth in the country, Priscilla Lopesleep.
Right.
We'll be heading over with her into Zurich after the games, and we were talking about endorsements. She's got six major partners on her going to the games, and she had a kid last year, and this year just hit a hurdle when push come to shove, and is back home training right now.
Pardon the pun, huh?
Yeah.
Chris McCashew, thank you so much for your time tonight. Sprint_Management on Twitter. It's MGMT for management, like that
you got
hipster
it.
Indie band out of Brooklyn.
I'm a little bit active on Twitter, too, so don't be shy to follow me. I'll talk about anything and answer anything, including Jose Canseco questions.
Wonderful, and especially this time of year, a must-follow for the Olympics. Chris, let's do this again soon.
Yeah, anytime. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your time.
All right, take care, guys.
Just to be clear, so we don't insult any of our Kazakh listeners.
Yes.
two athletes have been sent home so far for drug testing or testing positive for drugs. One is an Uzbek. She is a gymnast from Uzbekistan, and the other one is an Albanian weightlifter.
Not even thinking about trying the name, right?
No. Why should I do that? Luisa Galialina. Luisa Galialina, and the Albanian weightlifter is Hysen Polaku.
I think that you just did a very serviceable and admirable job.
Thank you.
On that, I have no complaints with the way that you bastardized both of those
Not
names.
To anybody from Albania or Uzbekistan, but we'll take our chances.
Well, that was really fun with Chris McCashew. I really enjoyed hearing about... I'm fascinated by the Olympics, and
so am I.
You
I
know,
really am.
He's out there, and he's trying to make these people a little bit more known, which is really important. I think it. I think it absolutely stinks to high heaven that we care so much more about the pros than we do the amateurs. The amateurs work just as hard, if not harder, with way less of a pot at the end of that rainbow. This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be back right after the break. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, special in-studio guest, Ben Christensen. Having fun tonight. We just made contact with Manny Acta.
No, he made contact with us.
That's very true.
I saw Kaufman on the phone again. I said, oh, who's up next? Mark McGuire? I said, no. Manny called in.
So we will join up with Manny Acta in about, 20 minutes time or so. Give him a chance to get back to his hotel room and settle in.
Sure.
And, it's a different time in Kansas City than it is in Montreal.
It is.
And they're in Kansas City. So I believe he called when he
figured it out. Yeah.
He called when he was supposed to, just in Kansas City.
He did. He did. Stupid daylight saving.
Mm.
Damn farmers.
Yeah. Screwing everything up.
Speaking of farmers, did you catch the opening ceremonies for the Olympics, Jay?
I did.
Did you not feel like the opening ceremonies, at least the first half, before the parade of athletes came in, was kind of similar to a SimCity computer game?
I was just wondering when all the hobbits were going to come out of the Shire, right, built right in the middle of the stadium.
Well, like, they opted for an army of Mary Poppinses instead, right?
Did they? I didn't see the entire thing. I caught most of it. I was working at the time. So
did you watch it, the Canadian feed, or did you watch the sanitized version that NBC offered?
No, we had it on CTV.
Okay,
and we were watching it, and CTV actually showed the North Korean team. So you know,
I didn't know that was what the American feed did. I know that they took away they cut out the tribute to victims of terrorism.
Oh, did they?
On the American program.
Yeah, yeah. Who'd want to see that? That's right. Not important.
Well, because it was, they were commemorating 7/7.
Uh-huh.
The act of terrorism in Britain that occurred the day after London was awarded the Games.
Right.
Hmm.
I think that's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Of course
it's
appropriate.
It was a little bit odd that, and of course we're saying this full on with a red-blooded, proud, flag-waving American in studio. And I hope that I'm not offending you by saying that.
No, I'm good.
Okay, good.
No, I'm good.
I'm going to go to McDonald's, eat 3 Big Macs, hopefully in the styrofoam containers, if you guys still have those here, and throw it out while I'm driving down in a gas.
We have our share of football, porno, and crack as well, so you'll be right at home.
Okay, good. We all are on the same line here. With thanks to Dennis Leary, which means with thanks to Bill Hicks.
Exactly. Right?
Okay. Well, as long as we're all on the same page. You all know the name of the song, and once the Kaufman Show moves back to late night, we'll tell it to you.
Yep.
I thought the opening ceremonies were awesome. I know that a lot of people were bored by them and maybe a little bit confused. And it didn't have the, for lack of a better term, shock and awe that the one in Beijing did.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But I don't think anybody died in the preparations of this one either.
No.
So, and I don't think that very many people were exploited too severely. At least not more than your average Olympics volunteer.
Right.
I speak from experience. Not as a volunteer, but seeing how the volunteers were,
mm-hmm.
you know. Oh, it's
They had some good acting talent, at least, you know, to go
you
with.
You mean
it
like
too.
Sir Kenneth Branagh
leading the entire brigade?
Sir Rowan Atkinson? No, I don't
Sir
think.
Sir Paul McCartney?
Sir Paul McCartney? Rowan Atkinson, has he been knighted? No, I don't think. Oh, yeah, he has,
oh,
hasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, totally he has.
They'll just knight anybody nowadays. It used to be like, you know, Olivier or Gilgood.
Right.
You know, now it's Atkinson.
Sir Pete Doherty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was happy with all of the music, though. I thought it was great to have. I mean, for me, that's Britain's greatest export. Mm. I mean, now the colonialism is dead.
You think music?
Well, again, now that colonialism is dead
and slavery and yeah.
Well, I don't think that
naval Britain, ships. What
does Britain get the mantle for discoverers of slavery?
Well,
do they get to wave that flag?
They certainly perpetuated it. They helped it out a little bit. Well, I mean,
it was more the Spaniards really than anything.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they were pretty good at well, everybody.
Right there, American.
Yeah. Boom! Everybody, anybody who was mostly white and had boats was pretty good at that. So,
yeah.
Anyway, we were talking about the Olympics, right?
We were, yeah.
Unity, where races all come together and everybody's equal.
What did you think about the fact that they didn't do the tribute to the Munich? It's the 40th anniversary of Munich, and there was a big hue and cry. Did we just get to
the problem is that they had already put 7-7 in there, and it's supposed to be a celebration. I mean, you're supposed to have your one low moment.
Is that the rule? One low moment?
That's what the bigwigs and the producers and the hotshots think, that people can only take so much of realism.
It's called not wanting to upset,
right?
The 50 Arab nations there.
Right. That's another thing.
And it's part of being politically, it's weird to say, but politically correct, maybe. 514-790-0990 if anybody wants to chime in on this one. I have a feeling it's a hot button topic. 1-866-896-2546. I personally would have liked to have seen it. 40 years is a long time to have not acknowledged an act of terrorism occurred at the Olympics against Olympic athletes.
During the Olympics.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. And it's weird the sort of... I find that Dr. Roge, Jacques Roge, is very lackadaisical about it. And the guy was there.
Mm-hmm.
He was a sailor in Munich. So he was in the village. He saw what was going on. You'd think that he'd have a bit more of a personal feeling about the whole matter. That would, you know, if I was there, it would mean a lot more to me. Or one would think that if you were there, it would mean a lot more to you. You know, the people who were in New York on 9/11 probably feel a lot stronger about things because they were there. They saw it. They breathed the air. It has to be done. And I don't care if there's already a low moment. You know, this terrorism atrocity supersedes this terrorism atrocity.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I really think it was a time thing. I really think it was we have our low moment, our one thing that we have to do, our one tribute. We'll leave it up to the Germans. The next time the Olympics are in Germany, let them do.
Oh, you think that's what...
Or Israel or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Next time the Olympics are in Israel. That'll be what, the 12th of never?
Yeah, it'll be the 12th. It'll be the 32nd of July.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Lousy smarch weather.
All right. But I really think it's... I mean... It's the Olympics, so you're caught in the middle. You want to have this great world event where you don't upset anybody, you don't want anybody boycotting, and you're trying to appease everybody. But in order for you to do that, you have to be naive. You have to pretend like some things didn't happen.
And that's the line.
And that's the problem with the Olympics.
That's the balance that we take with us in talking about it, and
right.
And talking about the wonderful, you know, the spirit involved in the Olympics, that sense of camaraderie, that feeling you get in the cockles of your heart, okay? It's all BS, but it's wonderful. It feels great. It feels absolutely great.
It's nice to pretend for a couple of weeks.
But that's it. As long as you know in the back of your head that this is really actually this huge corporate behemoth, and we're seeing it right now with NBC's coverage of the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we'll discuss in about an hour's time with, we're bringing in a professor, Jay.
Now we're in trouble.
We're not going to mess around.
Not a professor of math.
He's a sociology professor.
Oh, good, because they're right. Fascists.
If he gets into anything math related, we'll be sure to bring it back to baseball.
Okay,
and then
thank
we'll
you.
All be okay.
Thank you. Nobody likes a fascist.
Except for the fascists. They love fascists.
Right.
This is the Kaufman Show. We're bouncing all over the place.
We are.
Have we talked about communism yet?
No, we can do that too.
Okay, after the break.
All right.
To those who take the metro, to my peeps who pay tax on the big O. Was once up at T.O., land of the big cheese. Then I stopped, dropped, and switched leagues like UP. If you don't know what we say, and I guess you never see Jalalu gripping a mic. I'm saying bye-bye to haters, just like Mitsu, cause grip make moves like Adlu with powder blue. No doubt we keep it moving like July 1st. Peace to Billado for breaking the curse. Ice Storm 98, Referendum 95. Whatever happens, keep it rolling like April Wine.
I believe in
Death by nerves.
Sugar kid, free sauce, and curse.
Love the Kurds.
I believe about conflict. Sugar machines, it's
wrong. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. From the guys who brought you the Bixie anthem last summer, that is DeGryptons. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's kind of catchy. Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe they can get you to sing it next time.
It's no John Williams Summon the Heroes, I'll tell you that.
Is that a Star Wars thing?
No, it's not.
John Williams is a Star Wars guy, though, right?
John Williams
wrote the score for it, right?
Yes, he did.
Okay, but he wrote a lot.
He wrote two Olympic themes, which are classics now. The one for Los Angeles in 1984 and the one for Atlanta, 1996. Summon the Heroes, and the first one is called Olympic Fanfare, I believe, and they're great.
Okay, I think I'm familiar.
You'll know it when you hear it.
I think I'm familiar with the LA 84 one. The Atlanta one's not quite jumping out at me.
Yeah.
But I can.
When you hear it, you'll know it.
I'll be okay with it.
Yeah.
I was very disappointed in the new version of I Believe, done by the Canadian Tenors. You see, Ben, you have to understand, when you're a Canadian watching the Olympics, it's a very different mindset than if you're an American.
Well, I think I tweeted about that earlier.
I think you did as well. first of all, and I saw it written very aptly on Twitter earlier today. If you're an American watching American programming, the American programming is done in a way that, like The Simpsons with Poochie.
Mm-hmm.
Every time that Poochie's not on screen, they want the people sitting there watching going, "Where's Poochie? Where's Poochie? Where's America? Where's America?" You would think that it was just the American Olympics, but they meddle. And they can go from sport to sport to sport and show winner, winner, winner. And when you watch Canadian Olympics, it's more like, well, they set a personal best. Or they and it's not
finished
a knock.
In the top 20.
Right. And that's not a knock, you know. I went to bed very late on Saturday night after overdosing on comedy, went to 3 Just for Laughs shows to wrap up the fest, which was just fantastic. And suddenly saw that it was 4 in the morning and went, oh no, Clara Hughes races at 7. And woke up early and watched her come in 32nd. But Clara Hughes is still the arguably, and I'll argue it till the cows come home, the greatest Olympic athlete this country has ever seen. And I don't know why you put Olympic in front of it.
No, she could, if somebody
she's
says
not just,
athlete, period.
Clara
yeah.
Hughes isn't just a good athlete.
How do you argue with that?
Every 2 years or every 4 yeah. years. And, you know, people say the every 4 years thing. That was when we were younger. It's the Olympics are every 2 years now.
She's kind of the Canadian Babe Zaharias. She does it all.
Babe Didrikson Zaharias?
Didrikson Zaharias, yes. She, many names.
I think she did even more. I mean,
she did even more.
Clara Hughes is a two-season athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Speed skating and cycling. Babe Didrikson Zaharias. Wow, I'm really tripping over that name. Imagine having that in the news update.
Golf, tennis.
I guess that's why they called her the Babe.
Mildred
Didrikson Zaharias.
Right. Yeah, she was kind of the Babe Ruth of women,
right.
I guess, at the time.
Well, could Babe Ruth play... how would Babe Ruth have looked on hockey skates?
Who knows? The guy was not only one of the greatest hitters of all time, he was also one of the greatest pitchers.
Yeah, just talking about his Babe Ruth's role in a no-hitter. Actually,
mm-hmm.
I think, was it Eddie yeah. Shore? Maybe you can look that up for me, Ben. I think it was Eddie Shore.
Come on, get to work, buddy.
Yeah. Hey, I've been looking up stats the entire time I've been sitting here.
Right.
So.
Well,
right.
and you've been putting them out on Twitter.
Contribute, man.
I have.
follow up with Ben on on Twitter, Shaka Brody, S-H-A-K-A-B-R-O-D-I-E, and he did. That's right. He mentioned when we were talking about 20-game losers.
Yep.
You mentioned Phil Niekro, right?
I did.
And old Mike Maroth there, you can hear him tapping away, getting you the information.
Mm-hmm.
High-class operation we run here at
Well,
TSN
John's not here this week, so we have to... We need a statistics guy.
John Kakalakis.
We need a researcher.
Will be back with us next week.
Yes, he will.
And we look forward to it. Not a moment too soon. We miss his smiling face.
Mm-hmm.
And the insight that he brings.
Yeah, and if something goes down during our show, like a head coaching change, we would have never have known.
We would have eventually
figured
it out.
But not as quickly.
It would have been a listener informing us.
It was
and not
a newsroom moment as he ran into the room with that piece of paper and put it right in front of your face.
Look at you, Jay Farrar. What a great reference. It was such a newsroom moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was, do we go with it or not? Because only NPR has confirmed it.
Right. And now, and then we'll do a lot of pretentious babble in between that nobody cares about.
Rudy, Rudy, Rudy. Oh, Jay, is that a tear?
No, it's not.
Jay, you're such a softy.
It's
oh wow!
It's a tear of anger.
This is some garbage.
It's
something
like
I
stubbed my toe.
This is some garbage, Jay.
Newsroom? Yeah.
No, this is some garbage. This is garbage.
Oh, the actual band.
Who will be at Oceaga next weekend? Welcome back to the '90s on the Kaufman Show. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. We've got Ben Christensen joining us in studio. Ben, you enjoying yourself?
Having a great time.
Good, good. Is it how you picture it in your mind when you're doing the weekly segments from wherever you are?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as long as I have a computer in front of me and a microphone in my face, I'm good to go.
Good, good. You wouldn't believe how many times I've heard that.
No.
If I had a nickel, eh? Manny Acta right around the corner. And... couple of people chiming in. Rene Leduc from the Phantom Shores says, haha, I thought there were two singing voices. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. There was a... Jay and I are sometimes known to harmonize. What can we say? Max Harris out in San Francisco chiming in on our Babe Didrikson Zaharias conversation says that she is more like Jim Thorpe.
Yeah, interesting.
Huh. Did she... I wonder. Again, you know, I'm sitting here with the internet in front of me. I don't have to wonder too hard. Did she compete in any Olympic Games?
Yes, she did.
But
it wasn't for golf or tennis. It was for something else.
Well, I don't think golf was in the Olympics back then, and she was a professional golfer. So she might have run into some of the same problems that Jim Thorpe ran into.
Right.
You know, back in the day, right now, Kobe Bryant's at the Olympics. We're watching on the screen right now is tennis live from Wimbledon at the Olympics, which, by the way, looks great. I love what they've done with Wimbledon. They've taken away all the signage, all of the... you know, the Rolex timing this and all of the, and it's all replaced by Olympic logos. Same thing in Vancouver a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool to go to a sporting event and not see any advertising.
Right.
Anyway, let's shift back to our favorite game, right?
baseball, that's which right. is not in the Olympics anymore.
Which is a great tragedy and something that we will get to, not with our next guest. But yeah, every time I turned on the Olympics in the last 3 days and saw a sport, I thought, well, that sport doesn't compare to baseball.
Yeah, or women's softball.
That's right. I would imagine that our next guest agrees with us. He is the manager of the Cleveland Indians. He's a great friend of our city. He used to be the third base coach for the Montreal Expos. And as I said earlier, was Vladimir Guerrero's translator. He's now... one of the best managers in MLB and the only one who'll give us some time. So let's welcome Manny Acta to the show. Hi, Manny.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
We're great. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I could be doing better, but I can't blame you for it.
Well, I hear what you're saying. Obviously, a rough series in Minnesota, and you know, you have a day off today, and then you start a set in Kansas City, and everybody here has got their fingers crossed the team can turn it around and make up these five games.
Well, yeah, I thank everybody that it's have their fingers crossed and praying for us. It's baseball, so it's a long season and a long roller coaster of emotions. And, you know, every day is a new day. We came from a very good series where we played so well against Detroit, and then we went into Minnesota, and they just beat us up pretty bad. So the day off came at a good time, and hopefully we can come out tomorrow and start winning again.
How do you manage to keep a team grounded when they get streaky like that? And like you said, you know, Detroit, that's a huge series, so important. And then perhaps there's a letdown going into playing a team like Minnesota that's just not as high up in the standings?
Well, I don't think the guys are letting up or anything like that. But our division, as much as a lot of people call it weak, it's balanced. And you just never know who you're going to run into it. And this is the big leagues. You know, any team can beat you at any time. And they just play tremendous baseball. We have been struggling as a team, especially our pitcher staff, and they beat us up. They scored 28 runs in three games, and they just humbled us, basically. That's what this game is all about. You better be humble, because if you're not humble, you're going to get humbled by somebody else, and you just got to get back up again. It's a long season. You got to show up every day with the same face, keep the positive attitude, and not allow guys to get too down on themselves, and basically – make them understand that, hey, we're going to get back up again. Just keep grinding it out.
This time last year, Manny, the Indians made quite a splash picking up Ubaldo Jimenez at the trade deadline. Do you think that anything will happen tomorrow?
Well, we got our hands in a lot of things. I don't know if it's going to be, if anything is going to happen at all, or if it happens, I don't know if it's going to be as big as last year. I doubt it. You know, we're working on a lot of things. We're trying to improve our ball club, but usually takes two to tango, and it's very tough at times to find fit. And what we're trying to do is try to find players that are major league ready, you know, that can help us right now. And, you know, Chris is working really hard at it.
An example of a major league ready player that you picked up this year, I think, would be Johnny Damon. And a lot of people up here were wondering if Vladimir Guerrero was going to get that same chance. I imagine that once Damon came into the picture, that pretty much ended all conversation about Vladimir Guerrero joining the Indians, right?
Well, we at the end of spring training, we pretty much offered Vladdy the same deal, which was, you know, just come in, let us see you, with no guarantees, because you know, that's how things are, and everything was set. And unfortunately, we couldn't get an agreement for him to come, and then later on, he ended up signing with the Blue Jays, and you know, whatever happened. But once Johnny accepted the deal, then obviously we moved on with that. And it was unfortunate, because I really wanted to be able to have Vladdy with me again, and him being right-handed. But once we signed Johnny, that kind of went away.
Because of your prior relationship with him, were you one of the people that was really sort of boosting him and his potential, and you know, the idea of having Vlad back in the fold with you?
Well, obviously that had a lot to do with it, and I was the one who was talking to him directly, and you know, the rest of the stuff is handled by the front office and his representatives, but I was the one that kind of approached him with the instructions him understanding that we were not disrespecting him or anything, but that was the only thing we could offer. It was a come in, you know, play, show your shape in the minor leagues and see what you could do, and then we'll make a decision. But, you know, we couldn't get any type of agreement, and it was unfortunate.
We've got a couple of minutes left with Major League Manager of the Cleveland Indians, Manny Acta. Manny, I want to spend that time talking about the wild card. Are you a fan of the second wild card position?
I am a fan because it gives another team a chance to get in. And I will talk to you about the wild card, just what we think about it. But like as a manager, with 2 months to go, 60 games left, I'm not even talking about wild card. I mean, we should be thinking about winning our division. And then if you can't win your division, then you should be thinking about wild card. But, yeah, I do like it. I'm a fan of it. The more the merrier. I do understand that it's kind of one game and you're out. But still, if you're a wild card, just consider yourself fortunate enough to be competing for a playoff spot. I mean, the people that really deserves the royal treatment are the one who win the division. So even if it is just one game playoff, I'm not going to sit and complain if that's our case.
I'll tell you, Manny, I'm a fan of it. If it had been around when the Expos were here, I think they would have had 9 extra playoff appearances. What concerns me about it is the idea that the team plays all year long to play in this one and out game. I can't imagine if there's, if we see an end of the season like we saw last year with all the close races, we could be in a situation where a team probably won't have its ace ready till the third or fourth game of the next round.
Well, that's the price you pay when you don't win your division, Dave. I mean, you can't have it all. You can't get an opportunity to get in as a second wild card and also be able to set up your rotation and beat the team that won 105 games. So I'm sure that that's something that people are not happy about. It. You're not the only one, but that's the price you pay for not winning your division.
60 games left for the Cleveland Indians. Who is going to help bring the team over the hump and make the playoffs?
Well, it's going to have to take the whole ball club. You know, we talk about trading deadline and all that, but we don't think that just bringing one guy, whether it's a pitcher or a position player, is going to turn our whole team around. I think we haven't played the way I thought we were capable of, and it's going to take more than one guy. We're going to need Santana and Hafner and a few more guys in the lineup to pick it up so we can score some runs. And then we definitely need some more consistency at our starting rotation because pitching is everything, and that has really, hurt us as of late.
You know, Manny, one of these off seasons, we're really going to have to get you back up to Montreal.
I would love to. It's a very special place to me. I got a lot of friends over there still, and I'm going to have to do it, especially right after the season when it's still not too cold over there.
You got yourself a deal. Maybe we can find a ball game, a bunch of kids playing. You can go and give them some words of wisdom.
All right. That will be nice.
Manny, we'll be in touch. Best of luck in the rest of the season, and we'll be in touch during the playoffs.
All right, Dave. Take care.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right.
Manny Acta, the manager of the Cleveland Indians, live on The Kaufman Show.
Woo!
Yeah, that was pretty fun, eh? Even though he's not part of the Athletics, you're okay?
I love Manny Acta. I actually picked the Indians to win the Central last year.
Really?
Much to the dismay of many baseball critics. And
they were right in it until...
Exactly, until the closing tail in the season. I had the Tigers at the wild card, and it's just like it kind of flopped a little bit, but,
It's so hard to not run out of gas, and that's my fingers are just crossed for your A's right now, and it's great to I'm sitting here and I've got the wild card standings open on my computer, and to see Oakland at the top, 0.06 of a percentage point ahead of Los Angeles,
and the Angels are winning right now too. I think it's 5-3. Yep, over the Rangers.
Okay, and Oakland is Oakland's playing as well, right?
Oakland's playing the Rays tonight.
Has that started?
It doesn't start till 10.
Okay, here. West Coast.
Yeah,
yo. That's right, 10 o'clock here. Yep. I imagine we have a very large audience where it's 5:53 right now, thanks to you. We say hello to everybody on the left coast. Hope you don't mind our fast-paced East Coast way of living. Jay and I are very uptight people. You should see us. We're
yeah,
constant stress buckets, us.
Don't you love baseball managers?
You know what I love? I love that Manny Acta calls us at 8:15 during commercial break and says, Dave, I'm so sorry. I realized I was supposed to call an hour ago. My alarm went off. I'm in Kansas City. My phone switched times because we're in the central time zone. I hope we can still do it tonight. What a nice guy.
Sounds like a couple of my employees at the bar when they're late. But anyway, I've heard that excuse before.
Sorry, Jay, I'm in Kansas City. I'll be there in an hour.
Yeah, well, when it's Manny Acta, you believe him. And that's what I was, don't you, there's something different about baseball managers. And I don't know if they just become that way after a while, but they seem to be a little bit more honest. They don't give you generic answers, kind of like, I guess, an NHL head coach would.
Jay, you know why?
It's not so political.
I thought you were going to say vis-a-vis a player, but I think it's because they don't have the union and they don't have the PR guy
like
the union does saying, say this and you're going to lose. I mean, look at Guillen, right?
Yeah.
Ozzie Guillen, I mean, I imagine now he's got to watch what he says, but up until this year, he said whatever he wanted.
He really did.
And made some friends and made a lot of enemies.
Yeah. But every baseball manager has done that. And that's one thing that I love that hasn't changed about Major League Baseball is managers are still their personalities.
Yeah, but they're not gruff. Like when you think of the old school baseball manager, a Casey Stengel or
But there's still a couple of guys around. Like Jim Leland is like that.
Sure.
And, you know, Bobby Valentine is like that.
That's because we grew up on Buck Rogers here,
yeah,
right?
But you even say some of the other guys, you know, Ozzie Guillen, it's like I said, I don't know if you just become miserable and just, you know, and I don't mean miserable in a bad kind of way. I just mean a kind of like you get that, right? My kind of miserable, cynical and just, you know, like I'm going to tell you how I feel and I don't care what anybody says about it. That's what I love about Major League managers. They're a little bit different. They're from a different kind of mold.
If we can we say like Oscar the Grouch-esque?
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like that lovable, hate-filled creature?
Yeah.
Like my lovely co-host, Jay Farrar?
Yeah, exactly. just seen it all. You know what I mean? They kind of sit there and say, yeah, well, you know, I've seen it all. You know?
I wonder if...
Because they're usually former players anyway.
He's also one of the younger managers in baseball.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I believe he's 40, but not much past it.
Yeah.
He also never played in the major leagues.
No, he didn't.
Manny Acta, I believe he made it as far as double A with the Astros. Don't hold me to it.
I won't.
Okay.
Good. I won't.
But it is always nice to catch up with Manny Acta. He's a big supporter of what we had in this town. He loved Montreal. He loved being a part of the coaching staff in Montreal.
And it doesn't reflect on his managing ability. I always said that good baseball players will make the worst managers. It's always the worst baseball players that make the great managers because they figure out exactly what went wrong.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Jim Fanning was actually talking about that.
Right.
How he had a cup of coffee with the Cubs in the 50s and learned more the entire time just sitting on the bench and listening and learning. Let's take a call. We've got, what on earth does that say? Colorful baseball managers. This is JJ and LaSalle. Welcome to the Kauffman Show, JJ.
How are you guys?
We're great, man. How you doing?
Yeah, no, I'm good, man. I was just tuning in, and I wanted to call in because you guys made a good point. I mean, the thing about baseball managers and, baseball in general, it's a lot more colorful than hockey is. Hockey's very, as much as hockey's my number one sport, the players, when they're interviewed, the coaches, they're very wooden. They have wooden personalities.
Well, you get a lot of the same stuff over and over. The Shaky took the pass to Smitty, and Smitty, he put it roof. Exactly. And you know, we gave it the best we could for 60 minutes, and the team that put the most pucks in the nets won the game, eh?
Yeah, we saw that.
It doesn't matter what question you ask them. You get the same answer anyways. You
right.
Know?
Baseball, you get guys like Bryce Harper going, that's a clown question, bro.
Exactly.
I'm not going to answer that. But you're right, though. Managers really are the exception to the rule.
Well, I mean, listen, man. Think back in the history of baseball and history of hockey. How many more colorful characters in baseball have there ever been? I mean, just look at the nicknames.
Okay, but a big part of that, JJ, don't forget, a big part of that is that there have been a lot more baseball teams, and that baseball is a lot more disseminated in the media than hockey is.
So, a guy like,
now I'll use him properly because I said Eddie Shore before and I meant Ernie Shore, but Eddie Shore was a coach for a long time. He was very bombastic. Mm-hmm. People knew him with Rochester in the AHL, right?
Mm-hmm. And how many hockey players can you put out there who had, the last guy I can really think of is Eddie Sheck.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's a good example.
In terms of like over the top personalities, hockey just doesn't have them.
Roger Nielsen, maybe?
Nielsen, and that's why they have guys like Tortorella. I mean, God bless him, man, because hockey needs that.
But he's also, if you're a journalist covering the Rangers and you need a quote from Tortorella every night to fill a couple of inches in your newspaper column, then he's the worst guy in the world.
No, I understand that, but at the same token, don't bemoan the guy for having some kind of personality, you know?
So, I agree.
Anyways, guys, have a good night, man. I just wanted to chime in.
Thanks for the call, JJ. We appreciate it.
It also difference is manager is on the field. He's wearing the same uniform as the players.
Right.
He's in, you know, there's not as much separation between the head coach and the players as there is in a manager and baseball players. You're talking about Earl Weaver just sitting in the office, you know, no clothes on, eating a chicken wing, you know, and just talking to journalists, you know. It's
even if we had one day had the opportunity, the idea of a live interview with Earl Weaver, I think we would need like a 40-second delay. This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with former Olympian Nicholas Makrizanaris. Nick was on our show. He was live in studio back in March. Go check it out on YouTube. Yeah, that's right. We filmed it. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Ben Christensen joining us in studio tonight. Steph Hamel on the board doing a wonderful job. Is this going to be our last week together, Steph?
If you're leaving primetime, then it looks like it.
One more.
Oh, one more week?
One more primetime. Next week, 7 to 10.
So maybe I'll be with you guys next week.
It's going to be a fun one, trust me. We've got some really cool special guests coming into studio next week.
Looking forward to it.
It's the little hint is that it's post-Oceaga, everybody. So, it's going to be fun. Going to be fun.
We're going to have Snoop Dogg?
For Shizzy? I don't know. I don't know what we will not be having Snoop Dogg on the show, Mr.
Okay.
Farrar.
No,
we value our careers and the potential trajectory that we're making right now. And
you realize we had Jose Canseco on today, right?
Yeah, and
okay,
he was
just pointing that out.
You know what? Frankly, I think that Calvin Brodeus would bring way more opinions that we would agree with. We could talk about Norway with Snoop Dogg. He's not allowed in Norway anymore.
He's not?
No. Yeah. I don't know. They look down on something that they should have known he was coming into the country with when they booked him. Let's go back to some
Norway?
More Olympics
really?
Talk. Okay. Because I love the Olympics, and they're going on right now, and we have a former Olympian joining us live on the phone right now. The last time we spoke with Nicholas Makrizanaris, he was in studio. And hopefully we can get him back in before the end of the games. Nick is, I believe, a six-time Canadian sprint champion. He has the second fastest time in the 100 meters in Canadian history, right behind the shared 9.86 of Mr. Surin and Bailey. And here he is. Let's welcome him back to the Kaufman Show. Nicholas Makrizanaris, hello.
Hey, David. How's it going?
I'm great, man. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good.
Yeah,
doing
you good. Enjoying the festivities of the Olympics so far?
Yes, I do. I really have a good time watching all these athletes compete, and I'm impressed. You know, I see some events that I didn't have a chance to focus on when I was an athlete, and gymnastics today was very, very interesting, you know.
When you're at the Olympics, do you not have time for anything but your sport?
No, you don't have nothing. You have no time. You focus a lot in your event. It's very stressful. A lot of things are going through an athlete's mind leading up to the games, especially where they're just about to compete. It's very stressful, so you don't have time to do much, you know.
You participated in two Olympics, right?
Yes, Sydney, Australia in 2000 and Athens 2004.
Were you at the opening ceremonies for both of them?
No.
Either of them?
No, because the track and field team, I think this year they do it differently. Everybody's at the village. Us in 2000 and 2004, there were slots. So the first week we would be out of the village.
Oh, really?
Somewhere outside. And then And then let's say the first set of athletes would compete, and then they would move out, and then we would come in and replace them.
Huh. So
this year, I, as far as I can understand from some former teammates of mine, everybody's at the village right now.
Well, I know that some aren't. I know that there's some athletes that are still arriving. In fact, a lot of the track team hasn't gotten to London yet because their events start so much later. That I guess maybe they're afraid, or coaches are afraid, that it'll shift their focus if they're hanging around the village for a week without much to do.
Well, I think it's the opposite. Once you're in the village, you feel good. You know, you get your feet wet. You understand what's going on, and you know, you're setting yourself up to compete. When you change environment too dramatically, too big, you know, it kind of might have a negative effect to an athlete. You know,
interesting. Interesting. You know what? I didn't look at it that way. But again, being an athlete and all, it's hard to put ourselves in your shoes, and that's why we've got you on the show tonight for that expertise and insight.
That's right. I rather be in the village as often as possible before my event, because you get used to what to eat, you get used to your surroundings, you know where to go, what to do, and you set yourself up a little bit better, you know, leading up to your competition.
How do you balance the fact that there are athletes there that are, like, you finish your competition, you're done. Suddenly your mind is probably pretty much on letting loose after 4 years of training. Now, right. At the same time, you have to be respectful of the guy in the room next door who's competing tomorrow morning. There's got to be a bit of a balance in the two different mindsets that you see from the athletes who haven't competed yet and the athletes who've just finished and want to party till the next Olympics start.
Right, right. Well, there is protocols, you know. I'm going to try to use my examples. In 2000, I was roommates with a teammate of mine who we were competing in the relay, so we had no choice to follow the same schedule, you know.
Sure.
And usually team managers set up rooms accordingly to people in the individual events, you know, so they could kind of like get along, you know.
Which yeah, obviously makes sense. I'd imagine, though, that there's a bit of a, like, I can't wait to get this done so I can be over and just enjoy this feeling, too, no?
It's hard to, I think once you're at the Olympics, you want to savor the moment and enjoy it the most as possible and compete as much as you can and enjoy the Olympics. I would say the most, that feeling that you describe is probably at the Olympic qualifications in the Canadian Championships. You know, when you're leading up to try to qualify for the Olympics, once, you know, you finish and you qualify, you know, and you get that out of the way, you feel so much better, you know, because now you can really focus on having fun and competing at the biggest stage in the world, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I we're in conversation with Nicholas Makrizanaris, six-time Canadian sprint champion, went to two Olympics. And why don't you tell everybody about Mexico City? Because that's, for me, that's my favorite moment watching you growing up.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, it was one race that I was extremely lucky. I was 23 years old. I got invited to a Grand Prix competition in Mexico. I was in lane one. I was like at a late entry because, you know, there was already a lot of athletes that wanted to compete in this international event. There was, to name a few, a world record holder at the time, Tim Montgomery, was competing. There was a European champion, Dwayne, I forgot his name. What was his name?
That's okay. You beat him. Who needs to know his name?
And some World Cup champion was there too. But in the end, I went over there, unknown, you know, a young guy, and I end up beating the world record holder. And my life, I could easily say that my life has changed pretty dramatically from that point on, you know?
Yeah, it must have changed overnight.
Totally. I had security sleeping outside my hotel rooms, and I got escorted to the airport. It was just something you know, something unexpected, you know?
Nick, if we arrange for the limo, will you come join us in studio for a bit next week, talk some track and field?
Totally, I can't wait.
Awesome. Nicholas Makrizanaris, former Canadian Olympian, still very much worth looking up to. Check out his website, makrizanaris.com, does some great speaking engagements, does some great training with athletes. You should see the before and after pictures of the people he's worked with. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. And if Chamonix had an Olympic team, he'd be on that one too.
Nick, thanks a lot. We'll speak to you next week.
My pleasure, guys.
All the best. There he goes, Nick Macrizanaris. Fastest man I've ever spoken to.
Yeah, definitely.
I encourage you all to go check out the Kaufman Show on YouTube, the episode that we filmed with Patrick Burke, Nicholas Macrizanaris, and the Jimmy Riggers in studio. And Nick was just fantastic. We took our time with it. It was probably a 25-minute, half-an-hour-long conversation.
Yeah, no, he was very upfront, very, very honest.
We're going to take a quick break. And then when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about Twitter and the controversy that that arose today between the Independent newspaper and one of their writers who did not like the way that NBC was covering the games and encouraged, tweeted out the email address of an NBC executive saying, if you don't like the way that the Olympics are being run on NBC, send him an email. His account's been deactivated. We're going to talk about this with Professor Avi Goldberg, a sociology professor from Vanier College, after the break. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Ben Christensen.
Like that.
You like what?
Like that song.
You like the Doors, do you?
Yeah. I actually don't really like the Doors.
But you like the Changeling.
I like that one.
I like the Changeling too. That's right.
Song's got balls. I like it.
I'll tell you what, I think we have the appropriate guest on then to discuss such issues of testicular fortitude, my friend. let's
what
bring
an
in
introduction.
Absolutely.
Right.
And now we're about to bring this up a whole other level.
Let's do it.
Freedom of speech, Twitter, things that you think go hand in hand. We learned a lesson today that maybe that isn't so, and perhaps one has to watch what they tweet a little closer than they thought beforehand. Avi Goldberg is a professor of sociology at Vanier College. He tweets frequently, and I follow him. I really like his views and enjoy what he has to say. And now that I've buttered him up sufficiently, let's welcome him to the program. Avi Goldberg, how are you, sir?
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good. Do we have to call you professor every time we address you?
Absolutely not. That would be horrific. And what's this testicular fortitude? I can hardly pronounce it.
No, I don't know. I think it's the proper term for balls or something. I don't know.
Oh, correct.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
True enough.
We learned that in school.
That's good. You were paying attention.
That's right. Anatomy class.
You were paying attention.
So, this seems like the start of a big scandal, what happened on Twitter today, to do with the Independent's Guy Adams, who is a writer for the Independent, a British newspaper, but he's their Los Angeles bureau chief, correct?
Yeah, sounds right to me. Yeah, I think like you, I'm probably among these people who really doesn't know that much about who this person is. I haven't heard that much about his work before, but he's certainly taken center stage with what's gone on today, for sure.
Right. Now, he has been, I think this essentially started with the opening ceremonies, but he's been tearing NBC a very large new one. And at some point, he sent out a tweet saying, if you don't like NBC's coverage, send an email to their director of programming or whatever it is, and then gave the guy's corporate email address.
It's quite interesting, is it not? I mean, it's it's what you have here is, I think, you know, when you look at new media and technology and all this kind of stuff, you know, you've got a lot of people looking at, you know, are there two different logics that are at work here, right? The old broadcast model of a few producers and many listeners or many receivers, whereas the new media model is, you know, everybody has the right to create what they want to create. And you've got a situation where this just looks like a kind of a clash between these two logics. Not surprising, really. And it is a scandal in the sense that so many people are responding very negatively to what Twitter did in particular by closing down this guy's Twitter account. But I think that with the further spreading of new media and more people getting involved with it, I think that we're probably just going to see more and more of these types of clashes happening as we go ahead.
You know, Avi, if it was the guy's home phone number, and yet we had a guest on earlier, one of the greatest home run hitters of all time, one of the more interesting, outspoken baseball players.
A great head of hair, too, is it not correct?
Great. Nothing compared to Ben Christensen in studio. But yes, Mr. Canseco has a very nice head of hair. But the point is, he shockingly did something stupid on Twitter about 6 months ago, broke up with his girlfriend, and then tweeted out her phone number.
Right.
And I will say that was to my advantage, because afterwards, Deadspin tweeted out his phone number.
Exactly.
And that's how we got Jose Canseco on the show tonight.
Well, think of it this way. I mean, I follow you and I follow your partner Jay so much, you know, regularly. And I mean, think about what that community of information means to you guys, right? And how so instantaneously you feel that you're connected not only to information, but to people.
Right.
And the thing about Twitter and the new media that I mean, people love, of course, is that instantaneous feeling of connection and camaraderie and solidarity and, you know, and all these good things. So at this particular time, with so many people being so involved on Twitter for so many different purposes, right, not just sports but also news and entertainment and,
right,
and personal things, at this time when we're so used to that instantaneous connection, things that are live, that are happening all the time, and we're so connected, for this to really happen, to have an old broadcast model where, you know, sports events are 2 or 3 hours later and they're pretending that it's live, it really makes people feel, you know, those people who are truly involved in the Twitter world, it's like a double slap in the face. And again, it's those sort of those two logics kind of coming to a head and clashing.
At first, everybody seemed to be, well, at least maybe the non-Twitter people were talking about how this is the first true Twitter games. And I was thinking, you know, Twitter was around in Vancouver, but it wasn't. It wasn't everybody like it is now.
I guess that's also part of it as well, is just the number of people that have been getting involved and continuing to be getting involved, the fact that so many people, you know, are so used to it. But Twitter has also been talked about. I mean, I think it runs the risk of being a little bit cliche, but Twitter, you know, I don't want to overblow it, but Twitter and the social media have been cited as being involved in destabilizing traditional sources of strength and power, right? They talk about social media helping bringing people on the streets in terms of the Middle East for the Arab Spring in the last year. And this is a similar type of situation in the realm of sports where, everyone talks about the Olympics and realizes, of course, the Olympics is kind of big business and it's corporate as much as it is sports and all this kind of stuff. And people are so used to that instantaneous access and that instantaneous connection that, like I said, it's a feeling that people have the power to get their information, and when they feel that it's being, you know, taken away from them, it's just going to make more and more people, like I said, feel like, wow, they've kind of been slapped in the face, as it were.
We're in conversation with Avi Goldberg, a sociology professor at Vanier College, Ben Christensen, Dave Kaufman, and Jay Farrar.
Professor, and I'm going to call you professor because I've never had the chance to call anybody professor.
You know, I always tell my students, you know, they're always quick to call me sir this, sir that, you know, and I always tell them, you know, please call me Avi. But
I like professor. I feel like I'm in Back to the
really,
Future
eh?
Or something. It's awesome. Anyway, I was going to ask you, Twitter acts as kind of a watchdog for the mainstream. I mean, and I find there's such an irony that Twitter also acts as a watchdog for itself. Most people learn that Twitter deactivated the account from Twitter.
Absolutely.
So either way, and I'm sure people at Twitter know that this is going to happen. So what they do is they kill two birds with one stone. At one point, they appease the executives over at the NBC. Sure. And at the same time, they know the information is going to go out there. And just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
It is a crazy dynamic. And like I said, you started off, Dave, by saying, you know, like it's a scandal. And it is somewhat scandalous for people who are so used to growing up and living in, you know, in that new media model way of thinking. But I think this kind of thing will happen again and again. Just an interesting anecdote, Jay, like in relation to what you said before, was just like about half an hour ago when I went onto my laptop computer to get onto Twitter. Maybe this has been going on all day, but this is the first time I noticed it for me. Have you guys had to go through like a certain Olympic access first before you can actually get to your homepage? Has that happened to you?
On Twitter, no.
That happened to me, like I said, just within the last half hour when I sort of booted it up. I was directed to some kind of Olympic page, and the only way that I could first get access to my own personal page was to first get to some kind of more generic Olympic information page, and then I was able to go the next step, you know, to my own page. So I guess all that means is that, you know, when you're looking at it from Twitter, Twitter's in a very interesting place. They've, I guess, formed some kind of, a commercial alliance with NBC for these Olympics. So on the one hand, they are certainly hoping to profit and to continue to profit from the old large media companies that themselves are, you know, sort of fighting to adapt to the new media world. Twitter probably, on the other hand, probably, of course, wants to embrace this, you know, radical access to information and rapid and not having to listen to the traditional powers that be. And so somehow this is like a ping pong ball, right? Back and forth. And I'm sure, Jay, what you said is correct, that probably Twitter is aware of sort of the bad publicity on the one hand, that people are turning to Twitter for some kind of information about the bad publicity, and they're probably, just like us, are probably just trying to figure out how, you know, that ping pong ball will sort of go back and forth in that game as it continues to unfold. That would be my guess, at least. That's my guess. As a esteemed professor.
Well,
thank you, Professor.
And we
always wanted to say that, too.
And we thank the esteemed professor for his time. Avi Goldberg, sociology professor at Vanier College. Follow him on Twitter, Avi Goldberg, Goldberg like the goalie from the Mighty Ducks.
Now, can I ask Ben a question before I get out of here?
You want to ask Ben a question? Of course.
I'd love to know. I don't know if people have asked him. I would like to know, where is the best seventh inning stretch that he has seen?
Ooh, actually, that's a good question. The most unusual has been in Toronto because they have that separate little Blue Jays.
Okay, Blue Jays, let's play ball.
That was so weird. I went to three game, no, four games. So two of the A's, two of the Tigers, and it was just, what is going on every single game? But the best seventh inning stretch so far has...
You haven't seen it yet. It's at Wrigley Field.
It's going to be.
Yeah.
As far as what I've seen so far, I mean, with the A's fans, it was great because I am an A's fan.
Yeah.
So that was just kind of more endearing to me. But I think, yeah, once I get to Wrigley Field, it's going to be the real legit seventh inning stretch.
I really hope it lives up to what everyone believes it to be. So I hope you enjoy.
I appreciate that.
As the one guy in the room who's done it, it's worth it. It was awesome. Avi Goldberg, sociology professor, Vanier College. Let's do this again real soon.
I'd appreciate it, and thank you very much for the time, guys. Have a good night.
Thank you.
You too.
See you later. Bye-bye.
This is the Kaufman Show. That was good stuff.
He's a professor.
Head rising over the tide, two dark fish rides a devil astride. Big men go fast on the water.
Big men go fast on the water. Big men go fast on the water.
Child's face presses portable glass. Captain smiles as he drains his last. It's midnight for the graduating class. The impressions will last. It'll be about money.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Ben Christensen in studio. hankering for poutine.
That's right. Last hour has just been poutine on my mind.
He is jonesing.
The last person
he's never had one before. That's the weird part. Yeah.
The last person that I saw have a poutine who had never had one before was last Friday night. I believe it was Friday night at the Muppets Gala.
Ooh.
Where the Swedish chef made poutine. Bork, 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 bork. And heart attack. He had a heart attack on stage.
Who?
Swedish chef.
The Swedish chef?
From poutine.
After the poutine?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
He made poutine and then had a heart attack. And they had to bring out the paddles and revive him. And I can't remember who the Muppet was. But whoever the Muppet was said, "You won't believe how many times we've had to do this since he got to Montreal." The Just for Laughs Festival this year was so good. And I want to give my heartfelt thanks and congratulations to the entire festival, to all of the PR people, the press room. They got us 5 comedians on the show. And all 5 were fantastic. Got to see most of them. Most of them. Not all of them, but I got to see most of them. And I'll tell you what, Jay, Sam Simmons, who was the Australian guy that we had on last week.
Yes.
Maybe the funniest hour I've ever seen in my
life.
Really? Yeah. A full hour of just, he said, "It's going to be weird. It's going to be weird. Just warning you, it's going to be weird." It was very weird. It might have been the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And God bless my good friend Dave Schaefer, who was pulled up on stage and...
Oh, really?
One of your buddies went off? Really abused. Like, really abused.
Awesome.
Dave looks at me and says, "Is this a participatory show? Because we're sitting in the second row and I'm on the aisle. I don't know if I'm going to be okay here." And I just looked at him and smiled and thought, I don't know either, but I guess I'm happy I'm not on the aisle.
I love that stuff. Exploit the people.
It was great. It was just a great show. Type Sam Simmons into, you can follow him on Twitter. Some very funny stuff on YouTube, including a TED Talks that he does live in Sydney. And he's dressed up in full NASA spaceship gear, like the helmet and everything.
Yeah.
The guy was just so out there. And saw Delaney. Delaney was fantastic. And, you know, check out the interview from the Kaufman Show from a couple of weeks ago. And then go watch his stuff on YouTube and see how funny the guy really is. My goodness, he killed. It was at Club Cleopatra, like we said. It was at a strip club, which was, it seemed actually kind of appropriate. Like, it seemed like a good spot for him.
Well, if you read his tweets, it's perfect.
He's wonderful. He's a filthy comic, but with a conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And you were able to really, maybe you can't catch that subtlety on Twitter and through social media, but when you actually saw him talk, and you can tell that what's important to him and maybe why he goes to these lengths to make situations more humorous than they necessarily are. He just tweeted that the saddest Olympic sport is water polo. And Steph Hamel groans.
Wow.
Funniest man on Twitter, okay? I'm not ripping off the joke. I'm just repeating. Don't shoot the messenger, okay?
Okay.
Jeez, guys, come on. So Ben Christensen is about to, I'd say experience poutine, but really you're about to experience Montreal. You've only been here for 24 hours and it's going to be an interesting week, I think.
All right.
You know, it's got to be a little bit weird for you to be somewhere where there's no baseball. And just to give a little bit of context, and we don't want to harp on it too much, but Ben was in the Montreal Montreal. Wow. I wish. Where did that, what wishful thinking did that come from?
It would have been interesting if I went in as an Expos fan.
Do you think it would have happened?
I don't know.
Ben was in the MLB fan cave. You can look up the fan cave. Essentially, it's a reality show competition based in New York City where they called 9 people from all over the United States of America. And I think it was about 25,000 people applied. Ben was in the final 9 and was sent to New York City, spent a couple of months there watching baseball from a loft on Broadway where he spoke with us every week. Mm-hmm. And since he left the cave, he's now been touring across North America, as we alluded to last week with our Manu Chao song. He made it all the way to Tijuana.
I did. And, that was interesting.
From the way he looks, the rest of the Grateful Dead were there as well.
and Ben is now, he made a pit stop in Toronto and caught his Athletics play there. And then, the dude's an Expos fan. And, Lord knows that's what endeared me to him. And it'll be great to take you to a few Expos games.
Oh man!
But no, we'll do the tour, and more importantly than that is we'll show you how this city continues to thrive even without it.
Mm-hmm.
There is life after baseball. We live it, and we miss Major League Baseball. It'll be nice to maybe catch a bit of the Jays Mariners game when we get home, if it's still.
I was gonna say, I've got my MLB TV. Tune right in. We can watch the A's Rays game at the same time.
I think that's the most important thing that I want to get across. It's that even though you're not in this competition anymore,
yeah,
baseball's still your greatest passion.
Oh, of course. Whether I had the competition or not, it was that aspect of it was never going to change.
Which I think is important to get across for people to understand that even though you might be bitten by baseball, maybe it's hurt your feelings in the past, it's still a wonderful game, and I think that works as much for your story as it does for Expos fans.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I've always kind of said, and I threw it in one of my articles, it's not the executives that run the game. It's the people who play and the people who pay to see it that I love the most.
That's cool, and I guess you've met hundreds of fans.
Yeah, it's been really interesting, especially going stadium to stadium, and then people will come up and like, oh, hey, you're that guy from the fan cave. I'm like, yeah, how's it going? And I'll shake their hand, and there's a feeling of like celebrity that they seem to precede on me, and it's like, I don't feel like a celebrity. I just feel like a normal guy going to baseball games.
Well, it's the relatable celebrity. It's the celebrity that I could be him. I just have to win that contest.
No, exactly.
Like, oh, he's a baseball fan. I'm a baseball fan. That guy's just like me. Whereas the player on the field, it's a whole different, different level.
Absolutely.
You know, like I would venture to guess that very few people have been nervous approaching you.
Not yet. Well, no. Okay. Yes and no. But it depends on what they're nervous about. Is it nervous because?
Oh, like they? I don't mean like they find you scary with the beard.
That is a possibility.
No.
Because you know, who knows? You know, I look like a gruffer guy facially, at least. I'm pretty tall on top of which too. So I mean,
you're what, 6'2", 6'3"?
6'3", yeah. Okay. So there's a bit of a stature that goes along with it. But you know, places we go. I mean, we're walking down the street. And I just saw two people.
There was a lot more than two. We were walking down Green Avenue.
Everybody's like, hey, Jerry Garcia.
C'est Jésus.
it's all a matter of whether or not somebody's actually going to come up and talk to me. And I'd appreciate if they did, because I'm curious what they're saying. And
well, because you're a friendly dude.
Exactly.
Which is kind of important in this day and age.
Agreed.
And again, I think you're a great ambassador for baseball fandom.
Thanks.
And, you know, not every baseball fan is a corporate suit that works, 9 to 5 in an ivory tower and sits front row behind the plate.
Yep.
There's a bunch of guys that are like Bill Lee out there, too. And it's good to know that tradition is continuing through the younger generation of baseball fan.
Yes. And if there's any way I can, you know, help assist that progress.
I think you're doing it.
I'm doing my best.
I think you're doing it. And you have a really interesting blog. Beard to be feared, which I guess once you shave, you'll have to rename.
I'm not going to shave it. It'll be a nice trim.
Ah.
Some manicuring.
Do the girls like the beard?
You'd be shocked.
I think I would be shocked.
That's been the more surprising part about it. Like, every day I look in the mirror, just like, really, I'm going to go on another day like this. And women still talk to me. I think they find it more of an interesting conversation piece than anything. So it's better than like, you know, having War and Peace sitting on my coffee table or something like that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Having a big beard. Right. You don't want the girl that knows about War and Peace. That'd be just
ladies,
crazy, wouldn't it?
Ladies dig on the beard, Kaufman. I think you got to get on that.
I have a
bit
that of is a not stubble. A beard, my friend.
Well, I shaved this weekend for the first time in forever.
Why?
You notice there's like a shaved head here and a shaved
face?
Yeah,
what happened? You get lace or something?
No. Wow. 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 Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, that just hurts.
What did I say?
I look good, Farrar.
You do look good.
That's right.
He called me by my last name.
You know he's pissed. That's right. If only I knew your middle name, Jay.
then you'd sound like my grandmother. Yeah.
I don't think I can pull off that accent.
Jason Frederick.
Jason Frederick Farrar.
Yeah, that's
you
my
stop
name.
It right now.
Yeah, okay.
And Stefan Hamel, I want to go to commercial, okay? They're going to pick on me, and we're going to go to commercial. Mm-hmm. This one's for you, Jay.
It's got balls.
It's called Queen Bitch.
Mm.
Oh.
I'm up on the 11th floor and I'm watching. watching the cruises below. Father. Oh, our hearts in the basement, our weekends are all time low. Like he's down on the street and he's trying hard to force his to blow.
Breaking news on the Kaufman Show. We just talked to you about Rob Delaney's tweet saying that his favorite, no, the saddest Olympic sport is water polo. But unfortunately, he's gotten a lot of flack for it, so he's responded. People upset about my polio joke. I'm allowed to joke about polio because I don't care about people and their feelings. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Hate to break your hearts, but that song means this is the final segment. It's meant that for a while, and we'll continue that tradition. It allows me to program three less songs every week to know that the first song is always Deadlines by the Arkells, who you can see this Saturday at Oceaga. This is You Don't Knock by the Detroit Cobras. They were supposed to be here July 14th. They bailed. Just another disappointment in my life, Jay Farrar.
Time difference problem? Or
what? Yeah, between Detroit and here. I'm only going to go with border. It's usually a border issue.
You know, there was a kid coming up, I think from Connecticut or something, once at the pub, and they asked us if we had daylight savings time here, and I responded, yes, we have Christmas as well.
Do you know Jim in Toronto? I think he lives in an igloo.
Yeah, pretty much.
I met him on a plane once.
Yeah. These are college kids, too, by the way.
Shocker.
Am I allowed to say what college?
I'm curious, actually.
We've had a wonderful show tonight. This has been just so much fun.
It's always fun.
You know, we spoke with Jose Canseco earlier?
Yeah, we did.
How did that happen?
What a
trip.
Yeah.
I don't... Did you read that article? Can I just say that for a second?
Are we going to diss him now? It's been long enough, right?
No. We don't diss. Okay. It was very nice of him to take the time to come and speak with us. I like the idea.
It was because he doesn't really give himself up too much.
No.
To the media.
And that is the second time that he has spoken with us on this show, and neither time has ended with him getting mad or with anybody hanging up on anybody.
No.
The relationship remains intact.
It does.
He's on a different plane than us.
Yeah.
As long as we understand that, then everybody's going to get along just fine. But I'm not a big fan of bringing on a guest, hearing their opinion, clicking, hanging up the phone,
right,
and then going, what an idiot.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem appropriate to me. He's got an opinion. I said to his face that I disagree with it. I did, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said, there are a lot of crazy things you say that I can get behind. This is not one of them.
Yeah.
Gun control, to me, is a major issue. I find it interesting that he's writing in a magazine that I respect very much. I thought it was cool today when we saw that, and when we initially thought that Manny Acta wasn't going to be on the program, I looked through my phone and thought, hey, who can we reach?
That's funny.
And for the first time in ever, Jose Canseco picked up the phone. Mm. Not going to lie to you, I've been trying to get him back on, oh God, for probably about a year. And he did not pick up the phone, and tonight he answered the phone. So we got to hear that Jose Canseco is a gun enthusiast.
Yes.
Okay.
A big backer of his interpretation of the Second Amendment. And frankly, are any of you surprised?
No.
I liked
it. It's very simple. Isn't
no.
It? Listen,
no.
Listen.
For me, the nugget of that, Jay, was hearing him say that he thinks that the way that amateur athletics is looked upon in the States is a travesty. And I thought, for me, that was, of the 10 minutes, that was the most interesting part. Because
mm-hmm.
that means that he thinks about it.
Mm-hmm.
That and you would think that he wouldn't even spend 2 seconds of his day forming an opinion on it. they would be so off his radar. It's not.
Yeah. And it,
oh, that and the I'm too old to play baseball anymore. Haven't heard that from him in a ever.
Well, I guess he kind of realized that after he tried, you know? I mean, it was going well for a little while, but, you know, you realize when you reach that age. But there's one thing that I'd like to touch on, and I give you credit for this, Dave, because when you get somebody like Canseco on the show, you have to go to Planet Canseco. You can't bring Planet Canseco to you.
No.
And it is so foolish and so pompous of some people in the media when they think they could bring some people back down to their level as if, oh, hey, welcome back to Earth, and we're going to try and make you look foolish. Like you said, the guy took his time. He took his time to come on the show with us. Let's go to his world.
Right.
That's the whole idea.
And again, not, you know, no ass kissing, no yes, Jose. I said to him, you're speaking to a Canadian audience. Our sensibilities are, for the most part, very different.
Yeah.
The average person that you meet on the street here has a very different viewpoint on gun control than he does. Regardless, it was great to have him on. It was also great to speak with Manny Acta, especially more than anybody else. I love Manny Acta. I love that he still gives the time to Montrealers. I think it's fantastic. Obviously cares about this city. And you know what? If you're looking for a team to cheer for, the Indians start a 3-game set in Kansas City tomorrow. Hmm. Former Olympian Nick Macrozanaris, very good guy. And follow him on Twitter, Macrozanaris, M-A-C-R-O. Z-O-N-A-R-I-S. We'll hear from him next week. Also, Chris McCashew, I think we'll probably get in touch with him again because that was a really interesting conversation about the Olympics and business and a little bit about Twitter in there too, huh? And speaking of, Professor Avi Goldberg, sociology professor at Vanier College. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Professor.
There you go. Ben Christensen, thanks, man.
Hey, appreciate being here.
Great to have you in studio, and you'll have to come around next week again after Oceaga.
I will. I'm looking forward to the fruits that this city has to offer.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy plucking them. Mr. Hamel. Mr. Hamel, thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll see you guys
appreciate
next
it.
Week, hopefully.
Keeping this place nice and clean as always.
Hope your girlfriend wasn't too upset about the Swedish chef thing.
No, she...
He's alive. He's alive. He lived through it.
He's a Muppet. Of course he lived through it. And again, just for laughs, Robbie Praw, Danny Payne, everybody there was just... It was fantastic. It was a real thrill to sit there with my mom and hear the Rainbow Connection. I felt like I was a 6-year-old again. Jay Farrar...
Dave Kaufman.
See you next week.
There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band. Davey and me, face down in our suit, some French restaurant, I saw Riviere de Loup. Last night at a tour, we burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. For Jay Farrar, I'm Dave Kaufman, and we'll be back next week at 7 o'clock.
I don't know.
What'd that sound like?